South Connection, welcome to another excellent episode of the Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast. I am, of course, your host, Jake. We are right off the heels of Vengeance 2002, which is a pretty good show. I was joined by Sean Kidd on that one. So in this episode, we are going to dive into the fallout from that and sort of a rebirth for both brands, even though the draft is supposed to be rebirth, and that happened about 3 months ago. But here we are for another rebirth. So definitely a lot of intriguing stuff going on. Definitely the winds of change are in the air for these shows. But without any further ado, I will bring in my guest for this episode. He's riding high as his Kansas City Chiefs are headed to the Super Bowl for the second consecutive year. And that would be one of the main people in the brain trust at Place to Be Nation when it comes to all of the yearly stretch projects like GWCW and what have you. And that is Mr. Tyler Kelly. What's up, Tyler?
Oh, not much. Like I said, I'm just looking forward to the Super Bowl. I'm pretty jazzed about it. So I think I like our odds. So we can just get by that young upstart, Tom Brady. I mean, God knows, you know, I don't think we need him. I don't think he needs any more breaks. I think he's got enough going for him. So,
yeah. Another loss. Yeah, he knocked my beloved Saints out. So I'll be rooting against him for that heinous action. But I would say hot take. You have a pretty good team that you follow, I would say.
Yeah. Well, that 50-year drought between Super Bowls, I think maybe we've earned a little bit of good luck, and I'm going to try to enjoy it. So, and I'm going to enjoy it aggressively, ruthlessly so.
Perfect transition. So, like you said, we are coming off the heels. We're coming off the heels of Vengeance 2002. I'll go through the news really quick. Not a ton as far as the news this week. The only main little tidbits I found were there's a lot of Meltzer covers a lot about the developmental territories and how they're kind of cutting the budget of them, I guess, because as he's been saying pretty much as I've covered throughout the podcast, that they're sort of in a bit of a downswing money-wise and business-wise compared to where they were a few years ago. So they're slashing the budget a bit. And he mentions how a lot of that is going to come from the developmental aspect of their budget. And so he pretty much runs down all the numbers. I won't get into all that stuff, but it basically amounts to that OVW is going to be pretty much the exclusive developmental territory for this time frame, and just a lot of guys who they kind of had in the developmental territory are kind of getting cut not Hutt. But anyway, some of these guys you may recognize, some I did not. One that stood out to me was John Heidenreich, who we will, of course, see later on down the line in the Ruthless Aggression era. But just kind of sort of not really too many big names. But he does say that there are some guys sticking around in OVW. You know, some guys like Charlie Haas, some people that may come up down the line. Other than that, he mentions how... Oh, and one last part about that I thought was really interesting is that so Meltzer kind of, you know, gives his commentary on it, saying he didn't think that it was a great idea to cut from their developmental, given that there's, you know, they're the only real major promotion, big time promotion in the United States anymore. And so they don't really have the option of poaching talent from, you know, something like WCW or what have you, or an ECW or anything like that. So he kind of thinks it's not the smartest move, you know, in a time when they're kind of going to need to start developing new stars as their stars of the last generation are sort of moving on into other endeavors and quitting and all that sort of stuff, that they need to focus on making new stars. So he doesn't think this is the shrewdest move, which I think is an interesting sort of window into about 20 years ago, given where things would go and where they are now with developmental being, you know, such a huge part of their business. So they obviously would pivot away from this kind of cutting away from developmental and really invest in it later on down the line. And I do think he does have a point in that. I think some of the struggles over the next 10 years is sort of in part, like, they maybe could have benefited from a more robust developmental territory, but they kind of make up for it, I guess, by poaching from the indies. Any thoughts on this whole thing, Tyler, of the developmental situation at this time?
I mean, I guess it wasn't... Mm-hmm. I don't recall that being the case, but I think that they were rather fortunate that this particular time kind of saw a little bit of a rise in indies with... Ring of Honor was starting about this time, and when I think mm-hmm. of places they could poach, that's kind of what I think of is Ring of Honor, and I'm not as familiar with some of the other indies. I'm sure a lot of the same faces, the Brian Danielsons, Daniel Bryan, Lokis, and all of those guys, I'm sure were working other places as well, but that's kind of where I knew them from, CM Punk and all those guys. You know, I think the rise of some of those indies probably kind of maybe bailed the WWE out a little bit when they kind of cut their developmental a little bit. But that's about all.
Yeah, same for me. I'm not an expert on anything. I will say, at least in the short term, it doesn't seem to hurt them too badly because as we've already seen a couple guys debuting from OVW, and we'll see a few more over the next couple of years, at least in the short term, they're able to get quite a few guys that I think were pretty... you know, pretty good finds, and that would work out pretty well for them. Maybe nobody who would end up being like a megastar, but definitely some good talent. But other than that, he mentions how they're going to be running some shows, Raw and SmackDown in Seattle to test the market, to see as to test for a potential WrestleMania in Seattle, which of course will happen at WrestleMania 19. And other than that, he also mentions that Hogan versus Vince, which was originally supposed to happen maybe at SummerSlam, has been sort of put on the back burner. And we obviously know when that will end up happening, but it will not happen at SummerSlam. And it does make sense because it's not really something that they've been getting into lately. They sort of sowed the seeds of it a few weeks ago, but they haven't really done a whole lot with it since then. So it kind of makes sense that they would drop it. And I think it may be for the better overall. I think it ends up, it's hard to argue with what they end up doing with it. So I think that worked out. But other than that, that's pretty much it for the news. Not a ton of, you know, super noteworthy stuff in this week in the old Meltzers. So we will hop straight into the shows, Tyler. So again, I think it's the third time I said it. So we are the night after, we'll start the night after Vengeance 2002 with Raw. So this would be the July 22nd, 2002 Raw, which will be basically the first Raw, first true Raw of the Eric Bischoff reign as general manager of the Bischoff regime, if you will, because he was introduced last week on Raw, but he wasn't. This will be the first show where we come out of the gate with a fully Eric Bischoff run episode of Raw. And so he is who we see first as he comes out in his leather jacket and jeans, looking very smug as always. We see quickly, immediately, that JR and King are near the ramp as opposed to being ringside like they've been for the longest time. Obviously, to sort of mimic the style of WCW, which their announcers were famously in the, I forget what do they call that, like the crow's nest or what? I don't know if it's a crow's nest, but they're always on their little island, like off up the ramp somewhere, as opposed to ringside, like how WWE/F usually does it. So he's kind of changed their position. He comes out to basically announce what he has in store for us. He says the new champ, The Rock, will be here, obviously, because Rock won the title last night. He goes on both shows. Triple H will be here, who he says will be the next legend to carry the Raw brand into the future. Which on that, he brings Triple H out. He gets his full entrance. Triple H ends up taking the mic from Eric Bischoff, and he intros his BFF, his best friend, HBK Shawn Michaels. I did make a note here that everyone is in jeans here, which is kind of an interesting sight for like an opening wrestling promo to have everyone in there, everyone in jeans, because Triple H obviously is always in the jeans. Shawn's in his jeans, and Bischoff's like signature outfit at this time is his leather jacket and jeans. So Eric Bischoff says that HBK will be Triple H's manager, and we actually get a little bit of boost to in reaction to that one. HBK takes a little bit of exception to that. He says he has no problem being manager, but he doesn't want Eric Bischoff telling him what to do because that's not really his style. Eric Bischoff says that Shawn doesn't really have an alternative because he really has nowhere else to go. And Shawn says, if you've ever met him before, he does not like ultimatums, and that's not going to fly with him. So if it comes down to it, if it's between his way or the highway, if it's going to be Eric's way or the highway, Shawn is going to take the highway, and he immediately walks out, and Eric Bischoff accuses him of walking out on the fans. And so right after that, Triple H goes after him running backstage. So at this point, I did enjoy the, I thought that was a nice twist, because you're thinking this is going to be one of these long promos to open the show, and it is a bit long. But it kind of, I like that it got cut off. I like that Shawn didn't wait until the segment was like over and said, you know, I'm not doing this. I like that he just kind of spontaneously walked out. I thought that was a nice touch that he just sort of got pissed off and said, well, you know what? You're not going to control me or tell me what to do. I want to be Triple H's manager, but this is not the way to do it. You're not going to tell me I want to be his manager. So I thought that's a pretty good segment. I like Bischoff coming out and sort of laying out what it's going to be. And, you know, kind of introducing this as new, and already we see a lot of changes with the announcers and stuff like that. Any thoughts on the changes and sort of Eric introducing his new, I guess, what he's got going on Raw?
Yeah. So I was one in the camp that thought that they could have done more with Bischoff on his debut. But I think that this is just kind of something that we've talked about and you've talked about more from this era, in that there were just such a long line of things that were kind of, I don't know if I want to say they were misses, but they were things like Flair debuting the night after the invasion. And then now the Bischoff's here, and you just, at the time you're thinking, God, why couldn't they have got their ducks in a row and had this at a time when they could have used it. But now, looking at it, you know, almost 20 years later, you know, and we're not worried about fantasy booking or anything, just trying to look at it for what it was. There's just a lot of good stuff in this era, and Bischoff is definitely one of those things. He's just great as a slimy, smarmy heel right off the bat. I did feel like he mentions he's got The Rock, the new undisputed champion, The Rock, but then the real superstar, Triple H, is here, and Bischoff kind of kisses his ass, and then you kind of recap everything else that happened. And then did you want to talk about when Triple H runs backstage, or are you considering that kind of a second
section? Yeah, so we'll go. A lot of times when I cover these extended Raw openings, I try and break it up a bit, because sometimes they're a good like 15 minutes and there's a ton of stuff happening. But yeah, so let's go into that. So after this, Shawn runs out, he goes backstage, Triple H runs after him. We also find out, I had mentioned that Eric Bischoff also tells us that the European title and the Intercontinental titles will be unified tonight. So we're going to get RVD versus Jeff Hardy in a ladder match to unify those titles. But anyway, we head backstage. Triple H finds Shawn. He confronts him. And Shawn says that he didn't choose to work for Eric Bischoff. He wanted to come back to WWE. He wanted to help Triple H. You know, he wanted to be back on Raw, but he didn't know that was going to involve having to deal with Eric Bischoff, which, again, is a cool twist because obviously Shawn has never dealt with him in his career. He's one of the few guys on the roster that has never been around Eric Bischoff, because you could even say Triple H has dealt with Eric Bischoff to some extent because he did have a brief run in WCW. So I thought that was a little interesting caveat to this. But Shawn says he still has pride and he doesn't want to be a bag boy. And Triple H says, you know, if he doesn't want to do this, he can take his ball and go home just like Austin did. So they've kind of gone away from it in recent weeks, but every now and then you do get these digs still at Austin after he's gone. So basically Triple H sort of talks him off the ledge and he decides to stay. So I thought this aspect of it, I mean, these are two guys who are famously can get a little hammy at times, like a little melodramatic, but, and I think it was here, especially Triple H, I think sometimes can get a little, overwrought in his sort of acting, I guess you would say. But I did like the whole angle that they were pushing here, in that they were really getting across that Shawn is kind of uncomfortable being out of the spotlight. Like, he's not used to not being the top guy, because obviously when they, you know, the last time he was around, Triple H was sort of his sidekick. And now he's going to be the manager and sort of the bag boy, as they mentioned here. And he's not really comfortable with that because, you know, for, you know, the last 10 years of his career or whatever, he's sort of been, you know, like a top guy, like a star. So I did think that that was a good caveat, and it's a good sort of source of tension between those two. And so, yeah, I thought this was an interesting way to kind of start what's going to happen with these two.
Yeah. So the first note I had was about Triple H asking him not to take his ball and go home like Stone Cold did. And, mm-hmm. and he got booed for it. And I thought rightfully so. I was kind of done with, I think, the fans. You know, I don't think the fans are mad at Austin at this point. So, yeah. And I do think Shawn is cutting a good promo. I think he's believable and I think he's consistent with his character, not wanting to be told what to do. I also thought he looked younger here than I expected. His comeback must have aged pretty quickly, because he looked more like a 97 Shawn than a, you know, like when he retired. And I guess chronologically he would have been closer than that. But I don't think Triple H had a great promo here. I think he just kind of grunts and huffs, and when he tries to be intense, he just feels like he has to do it so over the top that I thought he was really overacting and kind of using Aaron George phrase. He doesn't really act like a real human when he does that, I don't think. I think this was one of those cases. One question I was going to ask you, do you remember if they promoted the unification of the European and IC title the week before? Like, were they advertising that match ahead of time?
No way. Nope.
No
way. This would be the first mention of any of it. And I guess they're kind of framing it as, I mean, I think in reality, it's probably they decided like in the last week as part of, you know, the everything changing with Eric Bischoff, and then sort of framed it as in kayfabe, it's Eric Bischoff doing. But yeah, definitely no mention of it at all. And it was kind of funny to get to, because I'd been mentioning over the last few episodes how the European title seems like such an afterthought. So I don't think it's the worst decision to kind of get rid of it, though it is a little bit weird because they sort of just put it on Jeff Hardy, who seems like he's getting sort of a push. And so it's kind of odd to me to, like, it almost seemed like they were putting on Jeff so he can kind of elevate it, and it would sort of be part of elevating him. He elevates the title, you know, mutually beneficial to the, you know, the position of the title and of him. And then now they're just throwing it out, which is kind of expected at this time, because everything is just, everything's very much in flux. So you tend to have things like this where kind of unexpected things, but yeah, absolutely no build for it. It's just Eric Bischoff comes out and kind of throws it out there.
It would be interesting to know if they had planned on doing it even as early as whenever they put the title, the European title, on Jeff Hardy, because it would make sense to do that so they could have a good ladder match. But And it's probably more likely that they put the title on Jeff and then thought, we want to get rid of it. Oh, hell, we can just have a ladder match with these two guys. That'll work.
Yeah, it's sort of I'm of two minds of it, where I kind of get that it fits what they're going for with, like, Eric Bischoff just coming in full force and kind of doing all this stuff. And so you could kind of sell it as him, you know, just coming in and making all these changes, because that makes sense. But sort of if you just think of it from a, you know, wrestling, I guess, booking perspective, I could sort of see the argument that, you know, you kind of just want to come out with this in an ideal situation. And there'll be a few things, I think, on this show you could say that about, where you, yeah, in the ideal world, you'd maybe want a little more build to it, like build to this title versus title ladder match sort of thing, instead of just throwing it out here. So I kind of get both sides of it.
Yeah, it does help build Bischoff up, mm-hmm, with Kim coming in and dropping all these things.
Yeah, which, as we'll see, is definitely on both shows a really big focus of what they're trying to do right now, is build both GMs. But let's dive straight into that match. So right after the whole Triple H Shawn Michaels drama, we go straight into the match we were just mentioning, which will be the unification match for the European and IC title, which I would assume is just going to turn into the IC title. I don't think they're going to get rid of the IC and keep the European. So we have RVD and Jeff Hardy in a ladder match. We quickly get the ladder to the center, which is always interesting. And it's kind of, this whole match is, it's really fast, in that, you know, a lot of times these ladder matches, they get a little bit more time. I think they'll sort of meander around for a little while, and then the ladder starts making his way in, where in this match, it immediately, like, the ladder was in the ring, they immediately get to the center of the ring. So they're moving at a pretty quick pace. Tons of ladder spots, including, you know, what you would expect from these two guys, that they're going to come out. And it does sort of work, a little bit of a spot fest. Maybe not the most cohesive ladder match you're ever going to see between these two guys, but it didn't get a ton of time. So you kind of get where they're coming from. They had to try and get as much stuff as they could in. Tons of cool ladder spots. We get the Swanton to RVD while he's laying on the ladder. Jeff gets powerbombed from the top of the ladder, and just lots of sick ladder bumps where one guy's going to the top, and like they don't, like they bump off of it. Like at one point, RVD kicks Jeff off the ladder, and he just kind of completely flips over and takes a back bump off the ladder. So they weren't, like, when they would get knocked off the ladder, it wouldn't be like the bumps where they kind of just jump off and land on their feet. Like, they were taking, like, real bumps off of this, like, really falling. So every time they get knocked off the ladder, it looked pretty good. And, you know, there, like I said, it wasn't, you know, I can't say that I noticed much storytelling to the match, but it was still fun. It was quick. Just a lot of cool spots, and I just thought it worked as a way for Bischoff to, like, throw out something to be like, look, this is, like, kind of putting over what he's going to be bringing to the table. Like, he's going to throw out these crazy matches sometimes, and I did think it was smart to put the European title out of its misery. RVD does end up winning, which I guess didn't surprise me. But it is a little weird because, the European title I thought was sort of going to be a way to push Jeff. But now that title's gone, he loses this. So I'm a little bit, I'm interested to see, like, what becomes of his little mini push now that, you know, his title's gone and he just lost this. But overall, I thought it was a pretty fun little sort of spot fest ladder match. I would have 3 stars on it, Tyler.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with everything you said there, I think. I made a note that at one point, Hardy drop-kicked the ladder out of RVD's hands, but didn't hit RVD, and the ladder didn't hit anything. So it just looked like he was trying to strip a ball carrier of the fumble, like trying to make him fumble. It was just like, oh, yeah, you can't have possession of that. And
yeah.
And I did think there were a lot of the good usual spots that you'd see. I think you mentioned most of them. And RVD wins with what JR called a modified frog splash, and it was really kind of just a flop splash. It's kind of what I called it. He didn't like kick like a frog like you normally would. You know, I thought it was good, and you have to appreciate the effort and the bumps. That didn't totally click with me and was a little disappointing considering both guys involved. Kind of like what you said, that didn't really have the time, so there wasn't as much of that connective tissue and the transitions and things like that just weren't there because of that time. So some of the big spots didn't feel quite as earned as they could have.
Mm-hmm.
I agree that it's good to see unifying the IC and the European title. because the European title is worthless at this point. I think it gives a good shine to RVD. And it does seem like they're trying to push him a bit. But we'll see where that goes. So, and I went 2¾ stars. So I was right with you, and I was debating between the 2¾ and 3 stars.
Yeah, I would say to your point, it has I think, you know, for the time it got and what it was and everything, I think it, and just the way they put the match together, I think it sort of had a ceiling. I don't think it was going to get to anything great just based on all those factors, but still a fun little opener to start the show.
And I think that this could have been like the anchor of the show. This could have been a main event. We'll talk about this as kind of a theme of the show. I think there were several things that could have been bigger if they weren't all on the same show.
Correct. Yeah. One thing that could not have been a main event is Chris Nowinski, who comes out next. He comes out and says, basically mentions how he's perplexed why people hate him. They really oversell on commentary his vocabulary, as if perplexed is like some insane word that no one's ever heard. Like, it is, I guess, a higher level word, but it's not like, you know, I don't think I would be a linguist or something to know what the word perplexed means. And so they really hammer home, like, oh, look at these big words from this Harvard boy, which I thought was kind of funny. But he says he gets why they would hate him for his advanced vocabulary and the way he is, because they aren't Harvard grads like him. And in the middle of him saying all this, he gets cut off by Undertaker's music. JR says that Taker didn't go to Harvard, but he has a PhD in kicking ass, which is a fun kind of corny line.
I can picture that for undergrad, but the prerequisites sound like too much work. So.
Yeah, so Nowinski tries to suck up to Undertaker, knowing that he's probably going to get his ass beat. Taker shakes his hand, but then wrecks him. And I did like the way that they framed it, that compared to guys, like, because Taker's sort of transitioned, like we said, he's sort of a heel, but he's moving more towards a tweener sort of thing, and his whole deal is, like, respect or whatever. And so I did think it was some good consistency to have, like, he's already shook, like, Cena's hand and Hardy's hand, because he kind of respects them as, like, young and up-and-coming talents. And the fact that he would basically just beat the shit out of Chris Nowinski because he doesn't respect him. So I thought that did make sense for Taker's character. And, it was interesting. It was kind of funny to see him get his ass kicked. But it's still weird, because I still don't really know exactly what they're trying to accomplish or what their real plans are for Nowinski. I mean, they have a basic character of this kind of smug Harvard guy, but I don't really know. You know, like, I don't know where he really goes. It's like he's almost trying to be sort of this, like, smug Mr. Perfect type, but then he's just constantly getting beat up, and he's just a chicken shit. So I don't really know where he goes. Like, I don't know what his trajectory is, I guess, for Nowinski.
Yeah, I agree. I just said that he had a generic promo, generic bland promo about being from a Harvard graduate and saying nothing else. And then I just kind of recapped everything he said, which was, you know, it didn't take long. I mean, he ate that last ride in just a few seconds after Taker shook his hand and then shook his head no, like, no, I'm not showing you respect. So
yeah, paying his dues, brother. But we head backstage, and we have Eric Bischoff, who is with someone we do not see at first, that he's talking to, that he says will be a big part of Raw, and that he wants to be a big part of Raw. And it turns out to be Rhino, which seemed kind of random. I haven't seen Rhino in any of these shows so far, but then he basically tells Rhino that they're going to keep in touch. So very random Rhino appearance. He quickly transitions then to talking to D'Lo Brown, who was, again, kind of random. I don't remember the last time I saw D'Lo Brown. I don't know if he was making the rounds in, like, Velocity or something at this point. He basically begs Eric to put him on Raw. And Stasiak, or Planet Stasiak, I should say, is nearby also. And Bischoff tells them that he's going to give them a chance. They need to go out there and entertain him, and that they're going to have 3 minutes. So we will see how that plays out in just a minute. And then we head back to the ring, and our next match will be, any thoughts?
Just a couple. So I did note that when he was talking to Rhino, Rhino says, yeah, we'll keep in touch. And I thought Bischoff has such clout that he can't quite land a commitment from a big star like Rhino. So, you know, I wasn't very impressed with that. And then I just said, and I said I didn't know that D'Lo Brown was still employed by the company at this point. So, and I might think that again some on this night. So,
yeah,
maybe not necessarily the Raw night, but on our night.
Yeah. Maybe D'Lo should have stayed on Velocity, as we'll see in a second. So we'll look forward to that star-studded affair in a minute between Planet Stasiak and
D'Lo
in 2002 D'Lo Brown. We head to our next match, which will be the continuing never-ending saga of Trish and Molly and whoever they decide to throw with them. So this will be an intergender match, which means that the women can have fisticuffs with the men, I'll put it. So we have Trish and Bubba versus Molly and Regal. Bubba is all taped up and beat to shit from his match at Vengeance, the table match. He's all taped up. He has and basically the gist of it is that he has one functioning arm, one arm he can't really use. So he's all hobbled. Molly and Bubba come out. They do a test of strength, which is real goofy. Ends up turning into basically a dance off, and then he slaps her on the ass, which was pretty cringy. Regal kind of
And JR says it's hard to miss that target. So JR's fat ass is calling Molly's ass fat. I thought that's pretty rich. And I hated that dance off thing. That looked stupid. So
yeah, it was stupid Bubba stuff. It's continuing to push they've kinda I think backed off on a little bit, but they still it's still part of the storyline. It's real stupid. Regal then comes in. We get a Regal and Trish moment where he's kind of throwing Trish around, but then Molly comes in, actually Dinley nails him. Trish gets a hot tack to Bubba. They do the was up where Bubba holds it and Trish hits Regal in the balls. Bubba then tries to go and get the table, but as he's screwing around with the table, Regal hooks Trish in an STF and she ends up tapping. So that was kind of an interesting finish. I thought it was probably the most interesting thing in this entire match. And like I said, that to me was sort of the highlight, is that to see Trish get to be put in the STF by Regal, just because I think Trish would probably that was probably a cool moment for her. And then Bubba looks like an idiot because he just bailed on his partner and let her get put in a submission hole because he's an idiot. It was okay. Like I said, the STF was kind of fun. It wasn't the greatest match. I just don't get it. Every time I see them trot this out, I just don't know why we can't just let the women have their own feud. Why do we have to have Regal and Bubba in this? They have a perfectly good feud that they could do with Molly and Trish. I'm a broken record with this. I say this every show. As a match, I want to star in a quarter. Nothing, definitely nothing great here. And I could go without seeing Bubba do his dumb dance. What'd you think, Tyler?
Yeah, so that the dance, left me pretty cold. So when they hit the what's up drop, when Trish hit it, King said, "Oh, I'm next." And I thought, I wish they would have done that. I wish they just jumped out and headbutted him right in the nuts for that. What about that do you think is hot? But whatever. It just, I kind of get how they were trying to get sympathy on Trish with having Regal put her in the STF, but the whole package was just too much pervy King and Molly's ass. And I think you're right. I think they're probably pumping the brakes on that a little bit. But it's still kind of jarring to see, to see it in 2021. You're like, what's going on here? And just Bubba in general. So I went a star.
Yeah, I'm at the point with this feud where they need to just shit or get off the pot. Let them have a match with none of this stuff. Let them have the feud. Let them blow it off, because it just seems to be dragging on and not really going anywhere at this point. And it's not really their fault. It's just the way it's been put together. It's kind of disappointing. But
Trish is very talented, and Molly hit a great Northern Lights suplex. So just, you're exactly right. If they just let them go, they'll get some good stuff.
Yeah. But unfortunately, I don't see that happening. But we go backstage. Eric Bischoff is speaking with Chris Benoit now, and he basically promises him an IC title shot. So again, we're constantly reminded throughout the show that Bischoff is scheming and putting things together behind the scenes of what he wants to have on the show. Finally, we get our new Undisputed Champion, The Rock. He heads out to the ring to a big reaction. I had this weird moment that I never really thought about this before, because Rock is in his normal kind of, you know, casual attire here, but kind of in this later part of his run, especially when he's a face, his pretty much standard outfit is sort of these like gym pants and like a cutoff shirt, which I never really thought about. It was really not the most like for being as big of a star he is, it's kind of a pretty casual outfit. Like I've said before, like you would think a lot of times, especially if you think of like old school wrestling, like somebody being a big star is going to be in like, I don't know, something about it. It was just like, man, he can go out there in like gym pants and a cutoff shirt and still look like such a star. It's kind of amazing that like that's his look and he still looks like, you know, like just a megastar. It's kind of a testament to him, but kind of a random thought. But anyway, he thanks Angle and Taker for an electrifying match at Vengeance, which it was. He said that he told Eric Bischoff or Jerkoff or whatever his name is that he would come to Raw as champ. And then as he's continuing to talk, he is cut off by Eddie Guerrero's music, which is a bit random. Eddie speaks. He doesn't head to the ring. He speaks from the stage instead, which I thought was a cool framing for this. I did like, and it kind of helps Eddie, I think, in a way, because I think for this promo, like, I think he was helped by not standing in the ring next to Rock, because I think it would have made him look like the difference in their size would have really stood out if he was cutting this promo. So I don't know if that's why they did it, but I thought it was a good move by them to kind of distance them and have only one of them in frame at one time. It's a little thing, but I think it makes Eddie look a little bit better here, because he does cut a really good promo. He comes out and says, I'm not going to try and do an Eddie accent, but he calls him La Roca. He says he has a problem with The Rock. His daughters idolized The Rock, and when he told them goodnight the other night, they had a pic of him on their wall. They had a poster of him, and they also had a picture of The Rock. He calls him a big shot movie star. And he said when he found out that his daughters were into that, he took the poster and he ripped it and he burned it. He sounds really insane here too. Like he's doing a really good job putting over like this intensity and that he's kind of a psychopath, like yelling at his daughters by having this Rock poster, really getting over, I guess, that he's kind of jealous of The Rock. And the whole crux of his thing is that like, he's sort of a workhorse. He's a real wrestler and Rock is, you know, some big shot movie star, and he needs to teach his daughters about respecting like basically like a real man or whatever. And he's almost like really breaking down at this point. And so really good, intensity and insanity from Eddie here. So Rock cuts him off. He calls him a sick freak and a psychopath and says he's not a movie star, but Eddie is. He asks him if he's Cheats or Chong. So some kind of typical Rock humor. Eddie says he doesn't have any respect. Basically says, oh, Rock, you think you're funny. You don't have any respect. And he says that Rock is actually the one who's jealous because he's the better wrestler and the better man. And he says that he has the hottest haircut, the people's mullet. And then Rock tells him he looks like if Billy Ray Cyrus had sex with a hyena. So again, a lot of these Rock jokes are a bit hit or miss. Sometimes I think they're funny. They don't always age super well. Not that they're always like super offensive or anything, but they can come off a little corny, I think, at times. It's very hit or miss. Some of these, I think, were a little bit of a miss, but, Eddie says he's going to teach him a lesson like he did with his daughters with the poster. And he said when he beats him, he wants a shot at the title. And so Rock agrees via song by basically singing, I guess, what it's supposed to be like in a Mexican accent is the best I could describe it. But then Rock does get serious at the end. He puts over Eddie as a performance, says Eddie is a spectacular wrestler and an athlete, but he would love to face him tonight and whip his ass. What did you think of this entire promo? Tyler?
Well, I thought that once Eddie came out, I thought he did a really great job of coming up with a story why you would be having this random interruption and coming up with a backstory for he and Rock to have an issue, you know, to predicate this match. So, I mean, it was a home run for that. Do you think that at this time Eddie kind of leaned into doing a lot of the Spanish and essays and everything? I feel like that was a little bit of a verbal crutch for him, and he gets better and strikes that balance a little better. Rock, I totally agree with you that he's hit or miss. I love The Rock. He's one of my favorites of all time. I think this was mostly a miss. And I don't remember that happening a lot in real time, but as I was watching this, I was like, yeah, this he's not really hitting on a lot of that stuff. So, I mean, I like the Eric Jerkoff line, I suppose, but Cheech and Chong just wasn't, you know, it was corny. I didn't find it offensive, although the singing Ariba at the end certainly doesn't age well. And
yeah,
saying that he looks like Billy Ray Cyrus had sex with a retarded hyena. I just don't get that one. But you know, the crowd is chanting and smelling what the Rock was cooking at the end. So, you know, and it sets up a match with Eddie and Rock, which I had no idea was coming and was happy to hear about.
Yeah, I agree with you on Rock. I thought the comedy stuff, or, you know, kind of his little jokey comments here were not the greatest. I liked a lot better when he was getting more serious in this, but I'm not even like against Rock being funny. It didn't work perfectly here. But I did like him putting over Eddie at the end by saying that he's like a great wrestler and all this, and that he would love to wrestle him and that sort of stuff. And I thought, if nothing else, Rock always brings sort of an energy to what he's doing and makes it feel big time. And I thought Eddie did such an awesome job of elevating himself to, like, because obviously Rock is like the superstar, and, you know, Eddie is obviously a star, but, you know, I think most people would probably, you know, even the biggest Eddie fans would admit that Rock is a bigger star. And I thought he did such an awesome job of kind of elevating himself up to Rock's level in this. And, you know, basically, I think he cut a better promo here than The Rock did, honestly. Like you said, I always love when guys do stuff like this. Like you mentioned, he sort of gives this little anecdote. You know, rather than just speaking sort of empty platitudes and stuff, I like that he actually had like a little narrative that he was following, and is like establishes motivation for like an actual thing that would have happened that pissed him off, sort of, because he could have just come out here and just the whole rant could have been, you know, you're not as good as me, I'm a real wrestler. But that he had some other thing to attach it to, I thought elevated the promo a lot. I loved his energy and how he was just like, you could see him seething throughout the whole thing and how his kind of anger kept on sort of escalating throughout the entire thing. But yeah, he was awesome in this. He really brought the heat, and I thought it was a really awesome Eddie promo. But, and this is a really cool matchup to see what they do with it. So we'll see where they go. But I should mention that at the end of this, Rock kind of is walking back up the ramp, and as he walks up the ramp, he sort of runs into Brock, who's coming out for his next match, which I thought was a nice little touch, because obviously the build's going to be on between these two as they're going to be meeting at SummerSlam, it seems, most likely, unless Rock loses the title somewhere. But so I thought that was cool to start establishing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they just walk right by him too without even acknowledging Rock, which I thought was kind of a cool little moment.
Yeah, so that was kind of cool. A good little in-between part. But so Brock, like you said, is coming out as he passes Rock, because he is going to be facing Tommy Dreamer in a Kane match. So he come in hot. Dreamer comes in. Obviously, this is his specialty. He comes in hot with the cane, but Brock quickly, like, overwhelms him. Dreamer takes some sick bumps in this match. He takes a belly-to-belly outside. Brock is just really decimating him. He kind of gets a little bit of a minor comeback with the cane, but then he ends up eating an F5, and just Brock looked like a complete monster in this match. I thought it was really effective. You know, it was essentially a squash with like some, you know, some Singapore cane shots in there, kendo stick, whatever you want to call it, thrown in there. So I only went 1.5 stars on it, but for what its purpose was, I thought it really served its purpose. I think Brock looked like a monster, as they want to continue to elevate him as he heads into SummerSlam. So I enjoyed this for what it was. I went 1.5 stars on it.
Okay. So I had that the stip kind of gives Tommy the illusion of a prayer, I guess.
Yeah.
Throws away the cane after the suplex on the outside you mentioned. And I think Dreamer got in one cane shot of offense just to piss off Brock. Boom, F5, and you're done. And he wins without the cane, and the announcers make a point to say that. And I thought that was kind of a nice touch as well. Brock doesn't need, you know, that type of shenanigans mm-hmm. to beat Tommy Dreamer. So, and I went 1 star for the squash, and I never quite know how to rank squash matches, but I agree that this was effective. So.
Yeah, I usually go, my standard squash is like 1 star. I think this one's a little bit better. I think just because how good Brock looked in here. And like you mentioned, it did kind of give the illusion that Tommy Dreamer could do something. And it gave him some way of getting some offense in that was believable. And I like how Brock just was like, he would just get hit with the kendo stick, but it was like he was getting hit with like, you know, like I'm trying to think of a comparison, like a twig, I guess. So it's a cool visual to see like Brock's big hoss ass getting just like the kendo stick is just cracked over him like a toothpick. I thought was pretty cool. But we should say that Taker shows up after it's over with a cane shot to kind of send Brock reeling back to their back because there's still a little tension between Brock and Taker. So kind of cool because obviously that's not going to be the focus now, but maybe something we'll see in the future. So I like that they're kind of keeping that at least in the back of our mind. So, all right, continuing on, we head backstage and we see Big Show confronting Shawn Michaels, saying he doesn't look tough without the NWO now, and says, and Shawn basically says he doesn't really even know how tough he is anymore because he hasn't been in the ring in quite a long time, or he hasn't really been in wrestling for a long time, so he doesn't know how tough he is. A little bit of an odd promo, but it was okay, I guess. Like, I guess they're just trying to establish like HBK as sort of, you know, I guess give him a few more face moments to kind of pivot away from being a heel with the NWO. It just sort of established what his character is at this point, that he's maybe not the HBK that we used to know because things are different. He hasn't wrestled. He's maybe a little weary and not as confident as he used to be sort of thing. So I get it from that perspective, I guess.
Yeah, so I did like Sean saying he didn't know if he was still tough, but he asked Shil if he wants to find out, and Shil just kind of says, maybe I will. And this sounds like two sixth grade boys in a pissing contest, and I have no idea what the point was, unless it's building for something in the coming weeks.
Yeah, so we'll look forward to the HBK Big Show feud in the future. But anyway, we continue on, and we get the D'Lo Planet Stasiak match that was alluded to earlier, and we kind of join in progress. And Bischoff is at the top of the ramp, and he's sort of watching very judgmentally, sort of laughing at the two guys. He chastises them for putting in an arm lock, and he's sort of counting down the time. And when he finally gets to the end of the 3 minutes, when the clock hits zero, nobody's won the match or anything, and he surmises that he has not been entertained by these two. So these two very large men in kind of cargo shorts and T-shirts come out and just completely annihilate both guys. And so kind of, I thought it was cool and that it was unexpected. They don't really tell us a whole lot about who they are or what this is. The commentary is sort of a little bit baffled at it. But I thought it was kind of cool just now as unexpected. I'm not really sure what the point of it is at this point. I know some people would kind of crap on this because they don't like the idea of Bischoff, you know, criticizing guys for wrestling or doing like wrestling maneuvers. But you know, it was entertaining in that it was just kind of random, but I don't really know where it's going to go from here on out. But that will be, of course, 3 minute warning. I don't know if did they call him 3 minute warning here? I didn't really catch it.
I don't think they did. So no. I made the note that 3 minute warning debuts, but I don't think they called them by name.
No.
And I think that was a good touch to have the announcers kind of wondering what was going on. So, and I do like 3 minute warning well enough as an act for what they were. And I would get the criticism of Bischoff being critical of the wrestlers for wrestling. And I typically don't like whenever they bring up weaknesses of the performers, but it's Planet Stasiak and D'Lo Brown. So like you needed to get this gimmick on TV. That's why, you know, they picked those two guys. So
yep, and continue to establish like what, like Bischoff's style and what he's going to be doing, and that he's really going to play a big role in the show, and this is just another example. So I think it worked in that sense. All right, so we head
I went half a star. I don't know if we were, I mean, oh, I don't know if it was enough to rate there, but
yeah, I didn't rate it because to me it was more of a segment. I mean, who knows, Tyler? We didn't get to see the whole 3 minutes. We don't know what they would have pulled out in those first 90 seconds. Who knows? They might have been, they might have been doing, I don't know, what would be some cool moves. I don't know, whatever. They could have pulled out a Spanish fly or something in those first minute maybe, that we didn't see.
Maybe someday they'll release it on the Hidden Gems. So last Battle of Atlanta, and then now Planet Stasiak, D'Lo Brown from 2002.
Life from That's funny. But we continue on, and we see backstage that Triple H gives Shawn something in a bag, which we'll find out very soon, even though we could probably predict what it's going to be. Then we head to Goldust and Booker T, where Goldust is complimenting Booker T, calling him the giant killer. Book says he thinks Goldie wants him to look like a fool because Goldie wants him to put something on, and he's assuming that Goldust has a crown to crown Booker the king. And he says, no, no, no. And he gives him a Don King wig. So so kind of a little bit of a twist on the King thing. But as I've come to enjoy these two, Booker kind of rolls with it. And he just says, oh, okay. And he puts the wig on and kind of he says, I think he calls Goldust his asserted and somewhat perverted friend or something like that, which I thought asserted and somewhat perverted was a fun description of Goldust. And he's into it. He likes the wig. He likes the whole thing. And again, I love the whole idea that they're kind of giving Goldust somewhat of the credit for Booker T's recent sort of successes, and that he's kind of become sort of his his coach, sort of like that, almost like he's motivating Booker T with his weirdness and all these weird things, and it kind of gets Booker T pumped up. It's a fun kind of weirdo dynamic between these two. I always love when on screen they just I enjoy them.
Yeah, I mean, they do have really good chemistry. I did make note that the crown was kind of a foreshadowing into a few years, like the Don King there. Also, in the backstage segment, when Triple H gives Shawn something to wear, I just said, God, I hope it's a DX shirt and it's not Shawn's ref shorts or assless chaps or anything, because sometimes I wonder where what they're driving at with trying to play up.
If they would have both come out in those ref shorts, that would have been like an all-time moment. Yeah, I kind of do like, too, that Booker T is, Booker T almost in a way, it makes sense he would get along with Goldust because he's kind of a low-key weirdo, too. He's not, like, as overtly weird as Goldust, but he's kind of weird in his own way, like in some of his catchphrases and stuff. So it does kind of make sense, but... speaking of him, we head out to the ring because he will be facing Chris Benoit tonight. The winner will get a shot at RVD for the Intercontinental title. Obviously, a little bit of history of this. They had the famous series in WCW, the Best of Seven. So there's some history between these two. So this one, Booker T kind of had the back. And at first, I thought it was the ribs, but then they sort of sell it as the back. That it's his back that's really taped up. So I just kind of that he has ribs and back. And that's sort of the story of the match is that Benoit was really focused on that. We get my favorite drinking game on these shows is the heel taking off the turnbuckle pad, which seems to happen constantly. It's just a thing at this time. I don't know why. Everyone is always taking off the turnbuckle pad. So he kind of works over his ribs and his back with the tape for a little while. And Booker T kind of makes his comeback. He doesn't really sell the rib stuff, which I thought was a little weird. And I thought he should at least sell a little bit, but he sells it zero after the whole first segment of the match was Benoit working him over. But Benoit eventually cuts off his comeback and basically makes Booker kind of pass out in the crossface, which is kind of... they do protect him a little bit because A, they show that he was taped up, so he's kind of injured. And also, I don't think he really tapped out. He just sort of passed out. But I did think it was kind of an odd loss because he's kind of been on the upswing lately. Like Booker's been getting a pretty solid push. So I thought it was sort of, it kind of shocked me that he just came in and sort of lost this match, but it was a pretty fun match. You get the typical stuff you expect from these two. Booker hit a nice drop kick. Benoit does his rolling Germans. Obviously, Benoit's really good when it comes to in the early portion when he's dissecting Booker T, trying to take out his back because it's injured and that sort of stuff. The only main thing I didn't like is, like I said, Booker T didn't really sell much of any of that in the comeback, which was a little odd to me if you're going to focus that much time and effort on that. But I went 2.25 on it. It was just a pretty solid match. Even if the result was maybe a little surprising, if not super surprising.
Okay, I must have liked it a fair bit better than you did. I thought that Booker was really laying in the chops early, and Benoit always does, so everything is just crisp and stiff. I did note that Benoit did undo the turnbuckle. He undid the middle turnbuckle, so it would go after Booker's back, so it would be Mm-hmm. Zach would be hitting that one instead of the top one like they usually do. And Booker hit a missile dropkick. To me, this match sort of did feel like a throwback to their, mm-hmm. their WCW days, because having just watched, you know, a lot of WCW over the past year, you know, and Booker would really go in like 98 when he was having a series with Benoit. And I don't always love his in-ring work in WWE. I think he gets maybe is a little overrated there, but this felt like a throwback to me. So Benoit's hitting his rolling Germans and then the German with a bridge and just kind of nonstop action. So I really liked the match. I thought both guys worked their ass off. And, you know, maybe I'm nuts, but I went 3 stars on this one. So I liked it a little better than this.
No, I could see it. I mean, it was a good match. I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm docking a little bit too much, but for some reason, him not selling the, it, I don't know, for some reason when the whole, it would be one thing if they just kind of did it, but it did sort of become the focus of the match, and I thought it should at least sold it a little bit, but it's nitpicky. But yeah, it was a good match. I enjoyed it, but it sets up Benoit as the number one contender for the IC title to face RVD, which sounds like a pretty good match on paper, so we'll see what shakes out with that. We keep on chugging along. Next up, we have Big Show versus Spike Dudley. Eric Bischoff is on commentary. Show is very pissed off. And basically, this is just him completely destroying Spike, who is an absolute pro at getting destroyed. He even rips off his shirt and exposes poor Spike's scrawny, pale body, which makes it look even more vicious as he's just throwing him around, beating the shit out of him. But yeah, this was just complete squash. Big Show just, destroying Spike, so I want a star. In the post-match, Bischoff says that he wants a table. But before Big Show could get Spike to the table, Bubba comes out and tries to save him. But it doesn't work out, as Show ends up putting Bubba through. Spike's already on the table, and then he puts Bubba through the table with Spike already on it. So effectively putting both of them through the table, which is fine. It makes, obviously, all of this makes Big Show look pretty good, but it's just, I don't know, it's just like the meandering tale of Big Show. Like, you just never really know what they're trying to do with him or what the point of anything they do. It's like, yeah, he looks dominant in this, but it's, you know, where's it going to go? What are they going to do with him? They never seem to really know what they want to do with him. One of the most, and even in watching Nisha, I know it's kind of his reputation, but just one of the most, like guys that you just look at, and it just almost seems like they never really figure out what to do with him. And then this is like a perfect example in this stretch. So,
yeah, I agree. They're always all over the place with Big Show. I think they just, it feels like they alternate between just being in love with him and he's the giant. We're going to push him as one of the absolute top guys, or we're mad at him for something. He's too bad. Yeah. He's too that. So we're just going to make him a jobber. And they just ping pong between the two, and they almost never find any middle ground. So I had nothing on this. Every one of my notes is exactly what she said. So there wasn't anything else. There was no match to speak of, really.
And then we have to always let Bubba look good in like all of his matches, but in this random throwaway thing, Big Show just like completely destroys him. So it's just like, I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. But anyway, something much more.
I feel like it helps Big Show very much to be able to beat Spike Dudley. I mean, you know. But everyone beats Spike, and no rational human being would think that was going to be, would look at those two individuals and think that was going to be a competitive match of any kind.
Yeah, or if it was trying to set up Big Show for something, like, well, we got to make him look dominant. He needs to go on a reign of destruction to set up something. But it's like, I just know that's not what's going to happen, because they never do. They just never seem to actually do that. So. But we have something much more interesting coming up. We see the DX Titantron video play, and it becomes obvious to us that what happened between Triple H and Shawn Michaels backstage was Triple H handing him a DX shirt. And one thing I noticed is, like, I didn't realize this, but I don't know if it was at the time, but definitely this DX video, it's like, man, if you have any kind of aversion to, like, flashing lights are like blinking and stuff, like, this one was almost messing me up, because the cuts they kept doing, like when they were playing the DX video, it was so quick of like flashing from one image to the next. It was kind of like fucking me up a little bit. Like, just how much like how quickly the images were coming up. I was getting a little dizzy, but anyway, Shawn does a quick intro and Triple H does the "Are you ready?" And the crowd is just eating it up as they're really excited to see the rebirth of DX. Maybe not quite the reaction I thought they would get. It wasn't like nuclear or anything, but the crowd was into it, especially once they started doing the shtick. Should note that I don't think Triple H in the original run did that whole deal until Shawn, after Shawn was gone. Not that it really matters, but anyway, so they're going to do it. And so Triple H is running up to do the "let's get ready to suck it" thing. He does it. And as Shawn is kind of going along with it, after he says "let's get ready to suck it," he turns to Shawn and pedigrees him out of nowhere. He takes the shirt off, he throws it, and walks out to a big, with to huge boost from the crowd, seemingly turning heel right here. Super well done. A great fake out. I like that he waited till after he said the "let's get ready to suck it." I like that he used it to distract Shawn because he knows Shawn's going to be like doing his little thing, so he knows he's not going to be thinking about it. Just an awesome moment. Great turn. I remember this from the time. I mean, I was younger, but it really like this really popped me because I was so excited to see DX back, and then just immediately see him, you know, to see them turn, and then now you definitely think these two are going to be feuding, and then it definitely puts the thought into your head that Shawn Michaels is going to wrestle again, because it'd be really strange to do all this and not have him wrestle, I guess, unless he gets like a proxy to wrestle for him, but it would be very odd to do all this and not have Shawn wrestle. So that's a pretty cool idea. And just to see Shawn take a bump, I think you could kind of notice he does take the pedigree a little bit differently, sort of in an odd way that would make you think, you know, he's trying not to take much of a bump, but he at least does take a bump, which I think is noteworthy. And just the only criticism you could maybe have of this is obviously, like we said, with you know, that ladder match earlier. Maybe in a perfect world, you build this up for a few weeks rather than them basically reuniting and Triple H turning on him all in the same night seems maybe a little like light speed, but I mean, I still think the moment hits because, you know, it's something, you know, some would have probably said you'll never see DX back together or see Shawn back here in the CDX, and then immediately it gets thrown out the window. This is a really cool kind of stunning moment. I thought it was really well done. What'd you think, Tyler?
Yeah, I agree completely. I thought that the DX highlight package was great. I mean, it was a really long package for something like this, and I hadn't thought about all the flashing lights, but you're right, if you were playing seizures, you're gonna want to look away from that. Yeah. One. I also thought the pedigree looked odd. It looked like Triple H jumped but kind of let Shawn's head free and kind of kicked his legs out behind him instead of, like, you know, driving the head down into the mat. So I don't know if that was Shawn didn't want to take that bump or if Triple H was just kind of trying to take it easy on him because he knew he hadn't been in the ring in 4 years, but it was noticeably a little different. So, and then I definitely remembered this angle and I remembered this turn, but I couldn't remember the timeline of everything that happened afterwards. So I don't want to do any spoilers, but I made a note that Triple H left the arena and I thought they made a point to show it. But I don't think that was the case now. I think that was just to show that Stephanie is arriving in a limo afterwards. So,
yeah, they kind of show them them crossing paths as Triple H is leaving Steph arrives. But the other thing I'll add to it is I think one thing that does help them on doing it so quickly is that they've at least given enough time to sort of you could kind of see the motivation behind it. It did, like, it's not just a turn for a turn's sake, because I think you can already start to, they haven't beaten us over the head with it, but I think you could sort of read Triple H's motivation, because you know, I guess the idea would be that he's upset because, like, basically he played that role for Shawn for so long. Like, he was sort of his backup and, you know, had his back and everything. And now the tables are turned and Shawn's sort of uncomfortable with it. And it kind of pisses Triple H off. Like, why can't Shawn do, you know, why can't he back me up after I did so much for him? Now that my career is getting to, you know, I'm a main eventer now. Why can't he be behind me? Why does he have to have the spotlight and that sort of thing? So I think that's an interesting, like, you know, even though they haven't had a ton of time to build it, I still think there's enough in there to justify why he would turn on him, to where it doesn't just seem like a turn for a turn's sake, which I like.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're doing it subtly and letting us kind of fill in some of the blanks, which is nice when they do that, and it's pretty rare when they do that. Usually they like to beat you over the head with that, but it's kind of refreshing when they don't.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I remember loving this feud at the time, so I'm looking forward to getting through the whole thing, so I'm glad it's kicking off. But same thing with you. It kind of caught me off guard because I was like, damn, is he going to turn on this quick? Like, I think about mine, I thought it was a couple weeks in before he turned on him, but no, like, they reunite and he just immediately turns on him. So, but we will head to our main event, which was set up earlier tonight with the Eddie and Rock promo, which will be Eddie Guerrero versus The Rock. If it is non-title, but if Eddie wins, he will get a title shot next week. Really cool matchup on paper, and honestly, one that I don't even remember happening much. Like, I don't know if I even in my mind knew that these two had many matches together, but or at least at this time. But we start off, the first thing you notice is just incredible energy from both guys, which makes sense because that's kind of a hallmark of both these guys, just incredible energy. Eddie is just really elevating on every bump. Like, Rock hits him with some arm drags, and Eddie is just really selling the shit out of him. Like, he flips with such velocity. He attacks the mat so well here to make everything look so great. And just this whole early thing is sort of them feeling each other out, and Rock sort of getting the advantage, but everything looks really good. Like, I can't, it's like the number one thing that comes to mind after this match is the energy from both guys. They just both look so fired up for this. Eddie finally takes over after Rock surges early. He basically weathers Rock's early onslaught and then tries to ground it more and kind of works in a few rest holds, but they did seem like rest holds with purpose, I would say. It didn't seem like he was just laying around in them. He was really working them in, and it did make sense because Rock has a pretty decent size advantage, so it made sense that he would want to kind of wear him down a bit and weaken him and ground him a bit. Rock starts to get his comeback, but Eddie rolls, and this was probably my favorite spot of the whole match. Rock goes for the Rock Bottom, and Eddie sort of rolls him out of the Rock Bottom into a sick pinning combination in a really awesome near fall. He goes to the Frog Splash and misses it, which allows Rock to then finally go into the Spine Buster and hit the People's Elbow for the win. I thought this was a really fun main event, a really awesome matchup that maybe you don't think about too much. Eddie, I thought, was fantastic, kind of matching his promo from earlier. He brought the same sort of energy to this. Like I said, all his bumping was so good. He was good on top, and he even worked pretty well as a heel on top, kind of talking shit the whole time as he was wearing Rock down. That spot where he reverses the Rock Bottom was awesome. I love that spot so much. It just looked so great, and it just made so much sense that, you know, he would be crafty enough to try something like that. I think the argument here is, like, did, you know, I love Eddie Guerrero too, but it didn't, like, kill me that he lost clean here. I mean, he's losing to The Rock. The Rock is the champ. You know, The Rock is, like, a megastar, probably the biggest star they have now that Stone Cold's gone. It doesn't hurt him at all. He's getting put in a marquee position. He got a big spotlight promo with The Rock. Then he gets this main event match with him. I thought it was a great spot. I thought he looked good. Basically, like, I guess my argument is that I think this helps Eddie and that he looked awesome in this match with Rock. I think you could argue that maybe you have Brock come in and get the DQ because, as we're going to talk about in a second, Brock ends up running out anyway. So maybe you could protect Eddie a bit and just have Brock run in for the DQ. But Eddie doesn't have a ton going on right now, so it just didn't bother me much. But I went 3 stars. I thought this was an awesome TV main event. What were your thoughts, Tyler?
Yeah, a lot of the same things that you just said I had. So I had energy and charisma were kind of the two constants I had. And I've got that several times. Good energy from both guys. So, and I noted that same spot where Eddie countered that Rock Bottom into a roll up. It looked great. It was a hot near fall. Like, I bit on it. And
Good.
Yeah, just in the flow of the match, it seemed like, well, that could be the finish. And there was no way, like, when I saw it was announced, I was super excited, but I thought, there is no way in the world that Eddie Guerrero beats The Rock here. I mean, that's just not gonna be the case. So, and I definitely don't think it hurts Eddie because he really wasn't on Rock's level as a star anyway. He was about a year away from really gaining that momentum. He's a fantastic wrestler, and the promo he cut tonight was great. But, you know, the Rock is the Rock, and he is the undisputed champion. So, you know, I expected Eddie to be eating the pin all along. You're right, they could have done the DQ. But, you know, it was just a great, fun match. And I think it, you know, it definitely makes Eddie look better. It elevates him. You know, I didn't remember him getting pushed this hard and interacting with stars like the Rock as often as it seems to, you know, watching along and listening to your podcast. So, and I went 3 stars as well.
Yeah, and you have to think, he's just returning. Like, he just returned this year, and already, you know, he had a feud with Stone Cold that got derailed, and now he gets, you know, this is not a feud, but it's like a one-night thing. And I think if what this whole thing on this episode shows is that you could definitely put him in a feud with, even if, you know, he doesn't have the star power of, like, a Rock. He obviously held his own in the match, which is not shocking at all, but that he also held his own on the promo too, like setting it up. You know, he's going back and forth with Rock. It didn't look out of his league or anything like that, which I think was really awesome. So I think if nothing else, I would think this proved, at least to the powers that be, that he could be put in this position and he wasn't going to, you know, he wasn't going to look like a, you know, like a chump or something next to guys who are these big stars. Like, he could elevate himself to that level, because he definitely did that tonight, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I think it says a lot that the company trusted him this much. Mm-hmm. Because, like you said, he'd just come back, and he'd come back because of some of the personal issues that he battled. So, I mean, it speaks well for Eddie that they trust him this much. And, you know, it just kind of foreshadows some of the good things to come from him.
I agree. So, yeah, also main event. After the match, Brock runs out. He grabs the title from Rock, and they kind of do a he kind of steals the title away. They sort of do a stare down, which is the first glimpse into these two, like, physically, like, matching off. And you definitely get the sense of being like, man, this is, like, physically a really awesome pairing. Like, because Brock is obviously, like, a beast, and then Rock is a big guy, like a pretty amazing physical specimen in his own right. And just seeing those two guys stare down, you kind of see this, and you're like, damn, this could really be something really awesome, you know? And then Brock throws down the title. But that was my main takeaway. I thought it was cool to do the stare down here, just so you can kind of see. And it's sort of what they're going to end up rolling with the feud, and kind of what they're going to build the feud off of, as far as them both being just, like, it's really going to be based on their physicality and them as athletes. And I thought this is a good way to show them, you know, what this pairing is going to look like. And it definitely looks impressive.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, they will play that up more as they build towards their match.
Yes. So they're definitely doing the slow burn a little bit, because they haven't, you know, we'll get the stare down. They kind of looked at each other early in the show, but no, you know, they're not really cutting promos on each other yet. So we'll see how it builds. But that does not end the show, as our closing segment will be Eric Bischoff, who is speaking with Steph, who showed up a minute earlier. He's basically egging her on. And she basically says something along the lines of that she's going to kick him in the testicles. Eric starts doing, like, all these weird karate moves. And so to show that she has kicked him in the testicles. So Brock walks up, and it sort of seems like he's going to be there to protect Bischoff from whatever Stephanie's going to do, or kick him in the nuts or slap at him or whatever. And then he finds out that Brock is going to get in the limo, which he does, and that Stephanie has signed him, which is the proverbial kick in the balls. And he is very pissed off. He had a really funny line after it happens. He goes, "I will knock you out." And he just keeps saying that over and over and over again. It was, like, cracking me up. He just can't, "I will knock you out. I will knock you out." So I really enjoyed that. But now we see that apparently Brock will be headed to SmackDown. So the talent wars, the war for talent, has begun to rage here, as they're starting to swap talent back and forth. All right. So that will close the show out. Tyler, what did you think of this entire episode of Raw?
Well, first I want to talk about...
Yeah, no problem.
The testicles, because we have to say testicles as many goddamn times as we can say testicles.
Just say balls.
That's the whole point of that. Yeah. it just sounded really stupid, but...
Yeah, it did.
Yeah. But overall, the show, I thought it was a really good show. had a lot going on, and really I thought it kind of had too much going on, because by the end, I'd almost forgotten that they unified the IC and European title at the start. I think that the ladder match, Benoit Booker, Rock Eddy, or the DX reunion could have all been main event segments, and I wish they'd all had a little more time to breathe. So I thought that the sum of the parts was kind of greater than the whole, because nothing was really built to that much. It seemed it, you know, any of those things could have been a little better on their own, I think, if they had a little more focus on them. But it definitely wasn't boring. So I gave this show a 6 out of 10.
All right. Yeah, I thought this was a very good episode. Some good matches. Awesome moments, especially the DX moment. I think it's like an all-time, you know, that's a super memorable one even to this day. It never dragged. And I think the whole thing with this, and I agree with you that there's a lot of stuff shoved into this one, but I think it does work, because I kind of get why they did it, because it's Bischoff's debut. They're really trying to put over, I guess, you know, it's a new era, even though we just tried to start a new era, like I said in the open, like a few months ago. So I kind of get why they did it, because they want this to be a jam-packed show to really show that Bischoff is coming out full force. So I kind of like that. And I just liked, everything felt fresh. It felt more focused than Raw usually is. Raw is usually has been a lot more of a meandering show that kind of seems like it drags at times. And this episode definitely did not drag. It just felt like things were a lot more focused. Like they it had a lot more momentum to it. Everything seemed like it mattered. Just a lot of cool stuff. It was very entertaining. Definitely one of the better Raws I've seen since doing the pod. I actually went 7 out of 10 because I think, I really enjoyed this one. It was something about, it's like a sum of the parts sort of thing for me. Like, I think all of this together just made for a really awesome episode. Obviously, we had some stuff that was kind of crappy at points, but I just think the show overall felt like a really good episode. It felt like, you know, coming off the pay-per-view, it just seemed like, I felt like they were doing stuff and that they're on the right track, because a lot of times Raw just seems like they're treading water. And so it's nice to see them feel more focused and feel new and fresh with Bischoff. And he was entertaining and he was a factor, but he didn't seem overbearing on the show. Like, the show, whole show was just about him. Like, we have other feuds that don't really, like, he's a factor, but he is not the focal point. Like, we're not trying to base the show around him as GM. You know, obviously we have other things that are more important, which I like. But yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was an awesome episode of Raw. But we will head straight into SmackDown. So this would be the July 25th, 2002 episode of SmackDown. And we are live from Indianapolis at the Conseco Fieldhouse. And we open with a Steph video package running down what she's going to do as her first SmackDown in charge. So the parallel Raw, where this, like, basically it was Bischoff's first show. This is Steph's first show. They did a lot of, like, in this video package of her, like, repeating. It was like, repeating, like, which got a little bit annoying at times. But I was cool with it as something different to open. You know, I'm always a fan of them at least trying something new. And, you know, it establishes her as GM. So I didn't mind that. What'd you think of the video package, Tyler?
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I thought the produced segments with the cuts, and you mentioned that repeating last word, it kind of reminded me a little bit of the old NWO commercials and WCW. Just kind of had that scratch sound. So I thought that was good. And I thought it, like you said, it was original and it did a good job of saying everything that was going on tonight. So kind of laid the groundwork for that.
Yes, that Stephanie is going to have her fingerprints on everything in the same way Bischoff did. So we come on hot with a match, no opening promo. We go straight into a match between Kurt Angle and Mark Henry. So the Battle of the Olympians. So this one, very short, never really got going much. It was basically just to set up the interference as Brock comes in a little bit into the match. It was pretty much just Kurt bumping around, you know, and it was good for what the time that they got. It was just Kurt basically selling his ass off, as he always does, for Mark Henry's power moves. But like I said, Brock comes in. He F5s Mark Henry, which is super impressive. So just continuing to build Brock as a beast here, as he just, like, hoists Henry up and F5s him, which is really good. I went a star on it just for what we got. But honestly, the match wasn't the focus here. It was just a way to have Brock come out and establish himself as, you know, as a fact on SmackDown now that he's been swapped over by Stephanie. And Angle gets kind of pissed off because Brock basically came and cost him the match and kind of cut off his match. So he's upset. He kind of confronts Brock around it. And Brock tells him, he said he was just trying to help you, Kurt. You look like you're in trouble. And he says that Kurt's days are numbered and his days of being number one are over. So I liked how he was kind of condescending there. So I thought it was a pretty good overall package. Like I said, much more of an angle than a match. So I only went one star on it, Tyler.
Yeah, I liked a lot of Mark Henry's power offense. You know, the world's strongest man has a lot of power offense. Who knew? Angle at one point couldn't lift Henry, so he just kind of did a double leg, which was a nice way to showcase his amateur background and his technical prowess, I guess. And I wound up going, I went a star and a half, because what was always quite good, but it was just too short and kind of, I mean, I guess the point was just to get Angle and Lesnar to have a face-to-face. I did think that Brock was not the best promo here. He was kind of bug-eyed and not natural-sounding. And I mean, I don't think promos have ever been Brock's strength, but here he's still very much just kind of feeling his way through it. But I did like that foreshadowing of what's going to come for Kurt and Brock, their feud and their rivalry.
Yeah, they were definitely trying to, it's like he's trying to find his voice or figure out like what his voice is going to be. And here he kind of goes for more of a like smug, condescending sort of thing. But I agree with you. He's never been the greatest pro. He definitely has some throughout his career that are pretty good. But he's always been a guy to me that's much better at the like not the talking aspects of his character, but just every other part of it. Like his facials and stuff are always usually pretty good. He's a little goofy in this era, but you know, all of this is him still trying to figure out. And he's being put in a really, you know, high position really quickly, which is always can be very tricky for anybody in wrestling to have to, you know, be elevated this quickly. And so you know, like the spotlight is so bright. And so he's still trying to find his way as far as what his promo is going to be. But yeah, I agree. It wasn't fantastic, but it wasn't terrible. He didn't look like a schmuck or anything.
No.
Yeah. All right. All right. Next, this next segment, Stacy heads into Stephanie's office because obviously she used to be Mr. McMahon's quote unquote assistant. And she mentions how Vince said her services are no longer needed now that Stephanie's the GM. Stephanie says that he's probably getting serviced by someone else and smirks, which I thought was extremely strange that she's smirking. Basically, she's talking about her dad, like having like extramarital affairs with secretaries or assistants and stuff. And she seems kind of like thinks it's funny or kind of, you know, like she kind of smiles about it, which is odd. Because it's her dad, so, but obviously that's always an odd dynamic in WWE between Steph and Vince, but I just thought her talking about her dad screwing the assistant, and she kind of thinks it's a funny joke, or yeah, what a family. But anyway, Stacy offers her service and gets the door as someone is knocking, and it's Flowers, and they find out it is from Eric Bischoff, and it is just has a vague note about loss. And Stephanie dramatically throws the flowers against the wall and they shatter. Any thoughts on this soap opera-esque little segment here, Tyler?
No, I had the same note you did. I thought it was odd and extremely gross thing to say about your dad. But you mentioned, Dave, of all the weird, inappropriate, and gross relationships they have, Stephanie and Vince is probably at the top of that list. So, what else do you have to say on that?
Yeah, so the rivalry between the GMs continues, and we'll be back to it in a second. We'll keep chugging along, and we are going to get a match between the Reverend D-Von and Val Venus, but both of these have cornermen. D-Von, of course, has the his bodyguard, who is no longer the deacon, just Batista. I did notice here something that I'd forgot about this, but right here they really emphasize, like Cole, especially on commentary, calling him Batista. Like I think as his career go on, they would just call him Batista, but here they really put a lot of emphasis on Ba in his name, which is really weird to me. Like it sounds so strange to hear it. So he's just saying Batista but they call him Bautista. But so Bautista is with D-Von, and Val Venus is with his best buddy, Hardcore Holly, as they're like good down the card buddies, apparently. So yeah, not a whole lot to this one either. Some of the first match. So also, I did make a note that I thought this was sort of a funny matchup. It's not Val versus Batista. He's facing D-Von, but obviously Batista's here. Given Val Venus, the real guy, Sean Morley, his comments in real life about Batista, calling him a communist or something like that most recently, like going on like a Twitter tirade. So I thought it was kind of an interesting matchup to have them sort of going against each other here. Maybe it's a battle over the communists versus the, if at least in Val's perspective, Batista the communist versus him. But I just thought that was funny. But like I said, not a whole lot going on here, as they just kind of do some back and forth as what you expect D-Von and Val to do. Nothing really to write home about. Pretty standard stuff. Val ends up winning with the sit-out powerbomb, which is sort of his little signature move at this point in time. Really, I thought the main point, just like in the last match, was for Brock to come out. This one was Bailey for Batista to come in and wreck shop after the fact, as he comes in and spine busters both Hardcore Holly and Val Venus. So really, I thought that was the only real thing of value of this. I want a star on it, because it's just like Val and D-Von kind of going through the motions for a couple of minutes. But Batista looks pretty good. He looked awesome coming in and beating everybody's ass, Tyler.
Yes. Okay. Well, I was unaware of the big Val Boski and Batista Twitter beef, but now I know that. But I was unaware of many things in this match. personally, unaware that D-Von was the one in it when they first came out. I originally typed Batista versus whoever was going to come out next. And then when I learned that D-Von was the one actually wrestling, I was quite disappointed. I was completely unaware that Hardcore Holly and Val Venus were a tag team. That was not a thing I recalled in the least bit. My description of this is a wrestling match. It's not horrible. It's not good. It's just kind of a match. They did things that are pro wrestling. Val wins with the sit-out powerbomb, and then I agree, the point was to get Batista in there, to take both guys out. I probably would have preferred him to just kill one of those two guys and call it good. I just had that it was just filler, and if there was a point or they were building to anything, I didn't see it, and I went a star.
You know, and it's like, it's kind of, you could totally see it being like, you know, you could see guys backstage and like Val being like, well, I want to get the win. So like, okay, you could win. We'll just let Batista beat you up after if you don't want to lose to him. I mean, whatever, dude, whatever makes you feel better. But to your point, if they gave a shit about Hardcore Holly and Val as an actual team, like if they really put any thought to it, they could have come up with like a fun, you know, given Val's porn character and that Hardcore Holly is hardcore in his name. I'm sure they could have come up with some fun, but I don't think they give enough of a shit about him to put that much creative effort into it. So, but if they wanted to, they surely could have come up with something fun with Hardcore in the name. But anyway, yeah, you should look into it. Val Venus is a very interesting guy in the current times, and the things he puts on social media. He's really angry at a lot of people all the time. But anyway, so we head to Stacy tells security to stop anything suspicious. And basically, if they see anyone trying to leave the building, they need to stop him out of fear that it could be Eric Bischoff trying to sign them away. We see Edge in the background, and he looks like he may be leaving. And so she sort of suspects that this could be Bischoff trying to get him. So Stacy kind of accosts him because she's worried that Edge may be headed out because of Bischoff. We then get Edge and Storm, who trash Hogan, which I thought they did a nice little twist here, saying, yeah, he is the real American. And they go on to say that because the real American is, you know, XYZ insults, like a greedy, stupid moron and all this kind of stuff. So I thought that was a fun twist, that they would twist real American, because real American to them is like a huge insult. And then finally, we head back to Edge, who is, security won't let him leave. Steph walks up to him and basically is kind of begging him not to leave and tries to reason with him. Edge said they like Steph's vision for SmackDown, and they walk over to a production truck. They put a tape in, And it's basically the Y2J counter, but it's for like an hour and a half or whatever. And basically he says he wants Jericho in a cage match tonight, and that's what the countdown will be. So we basically have a countdown that will remain on the screen for the rest of the episode, counting down to our main event, which will be Edge and Jericho in a cage, kind of reigniting their feud that had been put on hold for a little while. Any thoughts on this cavalcade of little segments that we just saw, Tyler?
Yeah, I thought the Un-Americans promo was pretty good. It was kind of paint by numbers, but it got the points across. I thought Christian's mesh shirt is both very dated and seems like it would be extremely hard on the nipples. I kind of felt like the Edge Stephanie stuff with the production truck was odd. I have no idea how Edge can think that Stephanie's vision rocks. How he knows that, I have no idea. On her first day, I don't know if she held a big meeting. So I thought it was a little clunky and corny, and I wasn't quite sure what the point was, because they announced that the match was going on in the intro to the show that Stephanie did. So we already knew they were having a cage match. I guess maybe if someone was tuning in a little late, they would know that. So. And I also had a note about the SummerSlam commercial where Trish drives the ice cream truck and shows a fair amount of her boobs, which seems to be really good.
So, yeah, that's awesome. All. I always love those commercials. Like anytime they do these like pay-per-view commercials, I'm like all in on them. Yeah, that's a good one. Like you said, it's an ice cream truck pulling up, and it's just instead of being kids, it's all like, I don't know, the key demographic males, like 18 to 35, running up to the ice cream truck. And it's Trish with the boobs out. And they do a lot of boob ice cream puns. Like, oh, you want two scoops or whatever. So, yeah. I always love these pay-per-view commercials for sure. All right. We actually continue on. And we're still not heading back to the ring yet. As we have Mark Lloyd, our backstage interviewer. And he's trying to get a word with Kurt Angle, who was walking around frantically on his flip phone. And he tells, I just always love, like, even in sort of a throwaway thing like this, it's always great. Like, Kurt is such, like, he's so into his character. Like, right here, he tells him to buzz off, which is such a Kurt Angle thing to tell him to do. Like, hey, why don't you just buzz off, buddy? Like, he's such a cornball. I love him. But he says that, Mark says that he overheard Kurt on the phone with someone named Eric. So, could this be Eric Bischoff, Tyler? We could never be sure.
Yeah, well, we'll talk more about that in a minute. I'll have the point where I think it's obvious. But I did want to point out that I did not know this interviewer's name was Mark at this point, so I just called him Interview Goober Stops Angle. So he's Interview Goober to me.
It took a good, 10 episodes of TV for me to catch his name, so don't feel bad. A lot of times I just have to say it every time so I remember. But anyway, we get our next match is going to be Rikishi versus Albert. Commentary pretty much is really focused on the GM drama going on, which is really about all they talk about. So obviously this is not a match with a ton of stakes, sort of just a filler kind of TV match here. But for what it was, I thought it was a decent little big boy match between Albert and Rikishi, just kind of two big guys, two horses, kind of, if you will, just going at each other. I thought they had some pretty decent spots, and Rikishi ends up winning with the rump shaker, which is basically like Yokozuna's like bonsai drop, which looked pretty good. We get a stink face in there, of course, but yeah, it was fine enough stuff. Just kind of two big guys just beating on each other for a few minutes, which is always fine enough. So I want a star and a half. Nothing particularly offensive, but nothing really memorable either.
Okay. So my first note was that I was surprised both guys are still with the company, much like Balboski before them. But yeah. Then I kind of remembered that Rikishi does have a memorable moment later in the Stephanie and Bischoff rivalry. And I have a question mark after rivalry, whatever we're going to call that. And I did have that it was a decent match, some good strikes and pace before Rikishi's ass-based offense and then the super kick and the ass drop. I'll take your word for it that it was called the rump shaker. I just didn't recall.
That's what Michael Cole said. I'm taking that from Cole. So
well, and at this point, I will trust Michael Cole. Now, if that were later years, maybe less so. But I did have that after the match, Rikishi dances with a hat that was on the stage. And I had, where the hell did that come from? Did I miss something there? There was just a random hat that he puts on and dances.
Yeah, like you mentioned that you didn't really remember if he was around. I would say that's about 80% of the reason he's around is because they just want him to come do that dance thing. So they can play too cool music and pop the crowd. I mean, he gets like full like pyro too. It's kind of amazing.
But was that his hat? Was that a hat someone threw up there? For some reason, I just feel like I need to know the story of that hat.
Yeah, I don't know. Could be. I guess he probably just had it waiting. He's always ready to dance, Rikishi is. But yeah, he's weird. He's like the SmackDown version of Bubba in that you're not really sure. They kind of weirdly always put him over a lot and like semi-protect him. But then you have no idea. Like he really is not doing a whole lot. So you just have him dance. But
I mean, I like Rikishi. You know, he made my greatest WWE wrestlers whenever we did that. A few years ago, you know, I thought he was super hot during the time he was super over. And I think he's a good worker, but it, you know, I think it's really hard for those two things to kind of combine. I think the goofy gimmick hurts him moving up on the card at all.
Yeah, I think he's just basically like a, it's like he's got a workman thing. Like, how do I say that? He just comes in if they need a match or they need somebody in a certain spot. You just put him out there like a, I don't want to say a workhorse because he's not really a workhorse. He's just kind of a guy on the roster they can throw out there. He's a name. People know him. They know his gimmick. You know, he can pop the crowd by doing the stink face and all, kill a few minutes on TV and get his check and go home kind of thing.
Yeah, I'll go one star.
Yeah. Makes sense. No argument for me. We carry on, and now we have Steph, who's interrogating Mark Lloyd about Kurt's status. She wants to know what he knows about who Kurt was on the phone with. Steph leaves Kurt a distressed voicemail, asking him to call back, and she is like begging. This is a point of the show where I said on Raw, they didn't. I felt like they weren't letting the Bischoff stuff kind of dominate the whole show. I feel like this was the point already in this show. I was like, okay, this is getting to be a little bit too much because I don't really find the GM, like the talent going back and forth, unless it has like a storyline already connected to it or something, like that they're going to another show for another reason. Like when they have Triple H and Shawn and they kind of built that into the feud, that's okay. But as far as just like, okay, is Kurt Angle going to go to Raw or SmackDown? I'm not really that invested in it. It really doesn't make much of a difference because I'm sure he's going to be fine. Like he's going to be good on either show. So this doesn't really, like, I don't know. It's not compelling to me. I don't find it's, like, I don't see the tension in it. It's not as big as a conflict as they're trying to sell it to me. So maybe I'm starting to, at this point in the show, I'm starting to think this is a bit too much, like, who's going to sign who? Is anybody going to leave sort of drama for my personal taste?
Yeah, so this was the same point where I kind of came to that conclusion. So, Steph calls Angle and she's all freaked out. And then I put that I assume everyone but Steph knows that he was talking to a different Eric. And I put presumably his brother. I don't recall how well known that was at the time, but that was what I. This was at the point where I'm like, okay, I'm quite sure that's where they're going. And I put that I'm completely tired of these segments. I didn't have any notes on it, but I think you brought up a good point that I don't really care who's on what show. And I think that's a persistent problem that the WWE has had with the brand split is they always think that we care more about that than we do because they don't make them significantly different. That, you know, it's not like someone can't show up at any given time. It's not like the shows are significantly different. I think they wanted to create the feeling of the Monday Night Wars, but they were never willing to make the shows different in any way or, you know, make it seem like there wasn't any chance of them just switching people at a whim. They did silly things like what show will you be on and brand supremacy and whatever other bullshit. And I think there were just far more interesting things they could have done. So,
yeah, but it won't be the last of it, so we'll see. We get a promo telling us, a package telling us that Ray will finally debut tonight after quite a few weeks of hype packages for him. So it's pretty exciting. But before that, we'll get our next match, which will be Hulk Hogan and The Rock teaming up to face the Un-American. So definitely a big tag team with Rock and Hogan teaming up again. Definitely want to get, they obviously want to get Rock on the show. So I do like that they have showed, like I said, Rock's in this match, that they showed that they've really put over the champ being on both shows. And they did it when Taker was the champion, and they've kind of done it since the brain split happened, and they've done a pretty good job of getting this over. Like, the champ has to be a workhorse. Like, the champ shows up on both shows, and a lot of times it's wrestling on both shows and that sort of thing. And it's just a factor on each of the shows. I think it really makes the champion stand out compared to everybody else, which I think is a cool dynamic. And like I said, The Rock has been a low-key workhorse since he made this return. Like, you would kind of think maybe in this role, when he's only around for this short time, he probably just shows up for the pay-per-views. But like we saw, he faced Eddie on Raw, and now he's in this tag match. Like, he's really been, you know, it's not like he's just showing up for the pay-per-views. He's kind of having a lot of matches on TV also, which is kind of cool. And then finally, Cole says that by beating up Rock and Hogan, if they can beat up Rock and Hogan, they will rip the heart out of America. What were you saying, Tyler?
Oh, no, I didn't say anything.
Oh, sorry. But anyway, Rock really carries the workload of the match. He's in for the majority of it for the faces. And I like the whole dynamic that they set up in this match, in that definitely the Un-Americans seem a bit overmatched, like size-wise, and kind of, at least in our minds, who's supposed to be better. Like, you'd probably think Rock and Hogan should dominate them, but they kind of evened it up a little bit with their teamwork and sort of cheating and using those two things to kind of get an advantage and keep up with Rock and Hogan, who are maybe overmatched, or they're overmatched against Rock and Hogan, which I thought was good. A lot of energy. Like I said, Rock always brings the energy for the most part. You have some good workers in here, like Lance Storm, Christian, a solid guy. So everything's pretty smooth. Tess comes in for a moment. He tries to interfere. He gets knocked off the apron, and he like does this like crazy bump, not really crazy, but just like kind of goofy bump where he flies to the announce table and like falls over the announce table onto his ass, which is really funny. So he really sells that pretty well. Hogan gets the hot tag like you normally see. And finally, Hogan's going for the leg drop. I forget even who he was going on. It was Storm or Christian. I don't even remember. But he goes for the leg drop, but before he can get the pin, Brock runs in with the DQ, and he hits the F5 on Hogan. So another Brock interference here, presumably to get under the skin of Brock. What did you think of this match overall, Tyler?
So I think the Rock and Hogan team is just phenomenal. A huge team, star power-wise. Hogan gets a massive reaction. And I had a few notes on it. So Tess kind of just right after Tess goes flying into the announce table, he kind of distracts Hogan. So Hogan hops off the apron and kind of goes after him. And Rock dives into the corner, but Hogan's not there, which, you know, happens all the time for babyface teams. But it looked odd because Rock was looking right at the corner, and like he could not have possibly not known he wasn't there, and he dives. Just tag nobody at all.
It's so amazing.
Yeah. But then they do make the hot tag. Oh, and earlier in the match, there was a something that I thought was pretty funny is Rock's kind of running the ropes and Storm's on the outside, and he kind of slaps his back. I mean, it's interference, but it wasn't very well done. It was just kind of a slap to his back, and Rock turns around and Storm kind of shrugs, and then Rock mocks that shrug pose and it just punches him. It kind of made Lance look like a bitch, but it was really funny, and it's Rock, so I'm good with it. And it was kind of, you know, a shitty little slap on the back, like, you know, what's that gonna do? So and then anyway, after Rock dove for the corner with no one, then he did make the hot tag to Hogan a few seconds later. I had that Christian hit the unprettier right before Hogan bulked up, you know, hit the leg drop, and then that's when Brock came in. I kind of wondered how they were going to get out of this, because obviously there was not going to be any clean finish. I thought it was a fine match with the energy. But I felt like Hogan and Rock's star power kind of, really completely outshines the tag champs. So they're in a bit of a bind. They're kind of painted into a corner. I'm usually a big fan of tag teams being able to hang with two single stars or even beat them. So things like Midnight Express versus Barry Windham and Ric Flair, which may be talked about by some handsome voters revealing their WCW list sometime. Mm-hmm. Tune into Nitro to find out. But I don't really think that worked in this case. I don't think it was that dynamic because the Un-Americans just aren't established enough, and they're no Midnight Express, but who is? Hogan Rock are just such a super team. I thought that they kind of, overshadowed the Un-Americans, with the tag team belts a little bit. But, it was really fun. So I went 2 stars. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm super low on that, but that's kind of where I was at.
Yeah, I'm a touch higher. I went 2 3/4 on it, so nothing, not tremendously higher. But I did think that the Un-Americans at least did enough, like you said, maybe not enough to seem like they're on the same level. They didn't get to that point. But I did think that they kind of got over that their teamwork and their cheating was enough to at least elevate them to some form. Like, they didn't look like complete goobers next to Hogan and Rock, because I agree with you. You don't want them to look... That's the danger of this match, because their thinking is, well, we want Hogan and Rock on a team. While we have Rock around and Hogan, let's put him on a team. The crowd's going to love it. But then at the same time, you don't want your champions, your new heel faction that you're trying to build, to look like a bunch of idiots. And so, like you said, you obviously know this is not going to – they're not going to let the Un-Americans beat. I guess there's maybe a chance that you let them pin Hogan, because they're not really that worried about protecting Hogan anymore. But I don't think they want Rock to be sniff anything that seems like a loss at this point going into SummerSlam. So agree, they're not gonna have them lose. So you're getting a non-finish. But I thought it was a fun match for what it was. Perfectly fine, just way to kill some time on TV, I thought. But
Hogan was laying down for Christian or Lance Storm in 2002, I have a bridge to sell you, brother.
Yeah.
There was no way that was
true. I guess it could have, not even the interference, but yeah, you're probably right. would have been incredible. But anyway, we head backstage. We have Brock trying to leave, but the driver says that this is Hogan's car. And then seemingly they carjack this limo, because they just say, no, I'm getting in. They force the driver to drive them, which kind of seems like them carjacking this poor guy. But so they've stolen Hogan's car, which is kind of interesting. But we carry on, we get Cole and Taz doing the thing where they interview someone, where the announcers interview someone backstage. And so Cena's backstage and he's talking about his upcoming match with Test of the Un-Americans. And I noted that Cena is already a big cheese ball that he would be known for throughout his career. And that he says, Canada gets free healthcare, but they obviously don't get free dental. Look at Test's teeth. He says, does mocks him and says something about, please fix my teeth, and calls him a Canadian woodchuck. So I'm glad to see that Cena, within, a month of debuting, is already honing his cornball lines about the Test having goofy teeth and all. He came off like a goofball. I mean, it's kind of endearing, but it was definitely kind of corny. And then Test comes in and confronts him and slaps him.
Cena actually said, how much wood could a woodchuck chuck if Test could chuck wood? And I put, this is awful.
Yeah, and he gets slapped for his measure, which is kind of fun, because that's been seen as ruthless aggression thing, slapping people. So Test gives him a little bit of his own medicine. But we keep going on, and we have Steph now with Jericho, and she says she wants Jericho to be happy. And Jericho says, of course he's happy. He does a Fozzy plug saying that Fozzy has a new record out, that he's happy about that, and that he's happy because he will leave Edge in a pool of his own blood tonight in the cage. So just a little bit of hype for our cage match main event coming up later tonight. And after this, we roll straight into Rey Mysterio Jr.'s debut against Chavo Guerrero. I think Amiali Ray has a really cool entrance. He has the jumping thing where he kind of flies off the little platform. He has the contacts in. Obviously, has his mask back, unlike his later years in WCW, which is good. He gets a pretty nice crowd reaction. Nothing, I think his reaction was like incredible or anything. They didn't like tear the roof off, but it was a nice little reaction. And overall, I thought this was a good debut. Obviously, Ray's going to go over in this, and it kind of worked a pretty basic match, at least like structure wise, in that Ray comes in hot. He does a lot of cool Ray Mysterio offense that looked really great here. Then Chavo sort of gets his little heat segment on Ray where Ray gets to sell. And then finally, Ray comes in and Ray works his comeback and wins with Arana. So just a good solid win. Again, nothing like groundbreaking as a match, but Chavo played his role well. And I thought Ray, especially in that opening sequence, I thought they looked really good. He was just doing all kind of cool Ray Mysterio maneuvers and stuff like that, just showing that he was the Ray, he definitely was going to be a factor and that he could go. And I thought it was pretty good for a debut for right here. He didn't look like particular dominant, but that's not really his thing. And I thought Chavo was a decent pairing because it's a guy he's going to work well with. So I went 2.25. I thought this is a pretty solid debut for Ray.
Okay. So I thought Ray looks like a star shooting up out of the floor. Mm-hmm. I thought that was cool. Cole said that Ray was the most celebrated luchador to invade the U.S. since Mil Máscaras. I thought Chavo really kind of worked well as kind of the base for Ray. And mm-hmm. even a guy like Chavo is kind of believable as having power offense with Ray because of his size. And Cole mentions that Chavo's a veteran and that they've been in the ring before. And this is where I put that Cole and Taz are just so much better at this point than mm-hmm. King and JR. I thought Ray did have a lot of good aerial offense. They called the corkscrew tope, called by Taz and Cole. And then Chavo hits a gory special to a gory bomb for a good near fall. Ray hits the 619. Taz calls it the 619. So maybe
on
that a little bit.
That's true.
Really good debut for Ray. Feels like he's already kind of evolving his style a little, I thought. I think he's doing a little less high-flying than he did in WCW, especially his early WCW stuff. But he still uses his quickness and his agility as his strengths. But he does it as a natural part of the match, which I think he's always done better than a lot of other cruiserweights. And he'll evolve that even more. As he keeps going in WWE, it's different than some of his really high flying stuff in the beginning of his WCW run. But he always uses what he can do in ways that make sense, and that has really good matches along the way. So I went 2.5 stars on this one.
Yeah, it was a good debut, and he's definitely a little we'll say he's a little bulkier. How about that? Than maybe the Rey Mysterio of most of his WCW days. He's a bit thicker in the upper body. Let's put it that way. But he looked good. I thought this was a good debut, and it's just amazing. Like all the roster they have now, and now they're just like throwing Rey Mysterio in there. It's like, hey, yep, here's Rey Mysterio. Like just another like stud on the roster. It's just incredible, and you could already kind of start salivating at all the matchups, like all the possibilities of guys they have on the roster that could go with Ray. It's pretty awesome. So, but anyway, Ray runs into Tess, who, as he's going back after the match, who sneaks him and throws him into a garage door. So we'll see if anything comes of that. But until then, Tess is going to be facing John Cena in the next match. So this one, not a whole lot going on here. It was basically like Tess overpowering Cena most of the match. And then Cena manages to get a roll up near the end and kind of reverse some for a win. It was fine enough for the time it got. Like I said, that was pretty much it. It was just Tess doing his typical kind of, which Tess is pretty good. He has a pretty decent kind of power offense arsenal. And Cena just selling it and then pulling the win out. So I went 1.5 on. It was okay. Not too much to talk about. It was a match.
Yeah, I think that's right. So when Tess threw Mysterio into the wall, he told him to go back to kindergarten kid. And I was like, yeah. this is just, I don't know what the point of that is. That seems totally unnecessary and stupid to have Ray doing anything to put Test over on his debut, but I guess Ray does okay for himself eventually. So, and I did think that Test could have been something if used correctly at certain points, but watching him tonight, I haven't been terribly impressed. And that's not so much with the match. That was more with his character stuff and interviews. And I mean, just the previous segment, I just, you know, I don't know. But I had that Cena just looks so odd as the up and comer in the trunks. And, you know, I think he does show good fire though. Like, I think even here you can see that he could go in the ring. You know, his style still is quite different than what it becomes. He can drop kicks and stinger splashes and things like that. And I had to test his pump handle slam, which I thought was his finisher, but Cena kicked out, which would kind of be a big deal if he was kicking out of the finisher. But after the match, he hits a big boot, and I was like, well, that may have actually been his finisher. So I'm I'm unsure, I guess, on what his finisher was at the time. But
yeah, I think it's he usually at this point is using the boot.
It seemed really strange that the announcers treat John Cena beating Test as like some kind of big upset and make it a point that he beat him 2 weeks in a row. And I think I'd take that Cena kid if I had to bet between him and the match with Test. But Test was fine in the ring. Cena worked hard and looked good. So I went 1.75 for this one.
Yep, that's 2002 for you. Cena upsetting Test. It is interesting because he and Orton at this time basically had the same kind of style, like super baby face, like you said, a lot of drop kicks, you know, that sort of stuff, cross bodies and all that kind of, you know, typical like
cross body.
Yeah, it's like textbook baby face kind of, you know, baby face stuff. But it is interesting because they're both, they almost have the same exact sort of style at this point, which obviously would change drastically as time goes on. But anyway, we'll keep going along. Steph is again with trying to get Kurt on the phone, basically begging him to come back and to make sure that he's not leaving for Raw, which obviously we're all on the edge of our seats to make sure Kurt's not going to go back. Just kidding. But anyway, we now head to our main event, which is going to be Jericho and Edge in the cage. So we come out. So I kind of had this match sort of broken down into like kind of three segments. It got a decent bit of time. I want to say this got like 15, 20 minutes. I don't know the exact time, but it got a good chunk of the end of the show. Edge is busted open pretty early into the match. So basically the beginning, they worked almost more of like a normal match with a few cage shots thrown in, and that they were kind of just going through their typical kind of offense and everything. Like they'd be working a typical match until finally like Edge ends up bleeding after he gets thrown into the cage. And then they kind of, it starts to grind down a little bit, not necessarily in a bad way, but just Jericho really starting to wear down Edge, and it gets a little more, like I said, wearing him down to try and make an escape. Cause they're basically doing, typical WWE where you can escape over the top, you can escape through the door, or you can get the pin. And so, that was kind of the second segment of the match, was a lot of Jericho kind of working over Edge to get, and then Edge has to sell to basically wear him down as they go into kind of the third finishing sort of sequence. And then the third sequence was essentially them basically trying to escape and getting cut off by each other. Like Edge is climbing, but he has to bail. So he then kind of hits Jericho with like a flapjack type of thing off the top rope. Jericho goes for escape out the door at one point. He ends up grabbing a chair, even though Edge cuts him off when he gets back in. He blasts Edge with the chair. And a lot of this was Edge kind of like selling because he's really punch drunk at this point because he's been busted open and he gets hit with the chair and all that. He gets a spear for a near fall. Jericho hits a bulldog to the top to try and stop an Edge escape attempt. So like I said, a lot of it is just them basically catching other guys. They're trying to go over the top and then turning it into some kind of maneuver. Like Edge then goes up and hits an electric chair drop on Jericho to stop him from getting getting over the top. And then finally, we just end up, I forget what he even hit, but Edge hits I don't know if he speared him again or something. I forgot what he did. I didn't write it down. But Edge, then finally, he goes to... So the whole match, they're really like... This match is really them doing... I call it like video game cage climbing. Where if you ever play like any of the SmackDown games or any of those where you do a cage match, the guys like always climb so slow, like comically slow. And so they're kind of doing that. It is a trope in cage matches, obviously. I think it really showed in this match. They were really like climbing in slow motion. Which I thought was funny because when Edge finally wins at the end, he climbs over the top. And then every other time he's climbed, he's like been kind of in slow motion. And then he just goes like five times faster when he's going to win. Like you immediately know he's going to win because he's climbing so much faster than he has at any other point in the match, even though he's presumably more, you know, has less energy than another point. So that was a little odd. But what did you think of it, Tyler? Like I said, Edge wins. He finally gets over the top.
Yeah, I thought this was a really good match, though. So, I had a lot of the same notes that you brought out. That, you know, Edge goes into the cage. He's the first to taste the steel that will rip flesh, is what Cole says. And, God, I like Cole so much more in 2002 than any time later. So, Jericho kind of does a cheese grater spot, which, and Taz calls it, just like that. Well, with in his accents, kind of cheese grater, but you
the
know,
cheese still. Grater.
Yeah, there you go. So let's see. I had this face plant spot. Jericho hitting a lion salt, or he had a lion salt, but it hit knees, and then Edge hits. Well, Cole called it as wow. It's a deal where he goes behind his opponent, grabs his head, and then kind of falls to his ass. And I think it had a name, but I just don't remember it now. And I think that was something that Edge kind of – I think both these guys always seem to be searching for new offensive moves, so they'd come up with things like that and, you know, just all the time. I think it's a credit to both of them for trying new things, but I think they had a lot of things, a lot of moves that weren't really winners. But anyway, Jericho kicked out of that one. So Taz called the – top rope inverted power bomb. And let's see, Jericho slingshot into the cage, trying to go for the walls, but he had a slingshot into the cage. I made a note of Jericho crawling to the door and getting the chair and just waffling Edge. So I thought that was a really good near fall where Edge kicked out. So he kind of is looking more like a baby face because he's bleeding, he's kicking out of chair shots and things. So, and then Edge hits the spear and Jericho kicks out of that one. So they really are kind of going for it. I guess there's a little bit of, you know, that might be too much finishers, but you know, I think it kind of worked in this setting. So, you know, to have this type of a match just on, you know, a random SmackDown episode, I think was, you know, really had a main event feel, you know, I thought. So, I kind of see your points about the slow climbs and things of that nature. I guess I was okay with it. So
yeah, it certainly didn't kill the match. It was just something I noticed. It was just kind of stood out to me. It's just funny that, and that's just a trope of, you know, escape cage matches.
Yeah, so I'll go 3.25.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you. I went 3, so I'm a touch lower, but I'm in the same ballpark. It was a really good main event. I thought they went through their paces pretty well. I thought they had a good kind of layout to how they did this. Like I said, sort of starting with a more of a regular match and then kind of working into the cage stuff. And yeah, just a lot of cool moves off the top. I think maybe it depends. You know, it's all about your taste for stuff like that. I think some people would say it got a little... You know, I don't think every person would like the way that they kind of would just go, guy climbs up, we're going to hit a cool move to stop the cage, you know, from going over. You know, some would think that's a little contrived, but I thought it was fine. I thought it was entertaining. And, you know, I thought the match built pretty well, and it's been a pretty hot feud. It is a little, I think maybe this could have been better in a different world where their feud doesn't get kind of cut off for a little while because now we're trying to just resurrect it. But we're kind of far removed from the peak of their feud when they were really going after each other just because Edge had to take the hiatus to go be champs with Hogan. So I think in an ideal world, they would have done this right off the heels of Edge coming back after Jericho injured him. But, you know, that's just the nature of things right now. They just throw things on TV sometimes rather than build into like a big blow off. So it worked fine as a really good pay-per-view main event. So, yeah, 3 stars for me. Pretty good stuff. It seems to be like a SmackDown thing at this point, like cage matches like as main events. But after this, we get the Un-Americans come in after Edge wins and they sort of jump him. But then Rey and Cena come in for the save. And I'm kind of thinking that might be one of the reasons why they had Test throw Rey into the garage door, is just maybe to give Rey a motivation to come save him, which I don't think is really necessary. I mean, I'm totally fine with just the faces coming out against the heels, especially on Americans, because they're like super heelish. So to me, and I kind of thought it was like a fun little throwback moment, having like the baby faces come out to the ring to save another face, you know, from these heels. I thought that was kind of a cool moment, but maybe I'm giving him too much credit, but that could have been the reason for the Edge Rey Mysterio moment, why he threw him in there, because now Rey has a reason to come. So who knows? But, and I also liked that they sort of framed it as, you know, Rey and Cena coming out to save Edge, that those three, that they're part of the future of SmackDown, that these are kind of you know, I guess more Edge and Cena, because it's weird to think of Rey as like this, like, oh, young up and comer Rey after even up to this point, how much he's done in his career. But I thought that was a cool little note to say that the future of SmackDown, anything to like try and establish an identity for each show I'm into. And so that was cool. And I like all the faces coming out. That's like a good kind of old school thing that I like.
Yeah, I agree. I loved that part. So, and Rey hit the crossbody off the top and then Arana on Test. So, I mean, that was just another way to make him look like a star, let him get a little shine. I did not put two and two together there to equate Test throwing Rey into the wall with this, but that makes sense. You likely have given it more thought than anyone that was working at the time did, but then maybe not. Maybe I'm just not giving them enough credit.
Well, and the thing is, like, even if that is the reason, you don't have to do that. I don't think anybody would be like in this moment, if that wouldn't happen, I'd be, well, what was Rey out there? I was like, he's a face. He's coming to help out his for the other faces. Like, it doesn't have to be like that complicated. So yeah, I agree with you. I didn't see any point having Rey get thrown into, you know, to me, he should look good on this night. Everything he does should make him look awesome. So,
and there was nothing should have pissed Test off about Rey simply existing. You know, that,
yeah.
I get that he's a heel and he's a dick, but like, that just seemed weird.
Yeah. So, you would think that would probably be the moment that would close the show, but it is not, as we had backstage, and I thought this was an awkward moment as Kidman is watching this with Steph. Like, Kidman and Stephanie are just hanging out watching the main event, which is kind of random. Stacy runs up and says that Eric Bischoff is here. Eric Bischoff rides off in his limo, so he kind of is sticking out of the like the sunroof, which I thought was funny. Speaking to someone, and he never really reveals who he's talking to on the phone as he drives off. Stephanie assumes it's Kurt, but we see Kurt walk up in the background. So he walks up behind Steph and says, yeah, I wasn't talking to Eric Bischoff. I was talking to my brother, Eric. I had to vent. I was really upset about what happened earlier tonight. So Stephanie can have a little bit of relief, but still she knows that Bischoff has been talking to someone, but she doesn't know who. And so we end on basically Stephanie's, you know, concerned face is what we end on, which I think I would probably prefer to end on your future, you know, the future of SmackDown faces after their, you know, after the cage match kind of in the ring. To me, that's a little bit better of an ending, but whatever, I guess.
Well, I think that would be preferable, but I don't think you're thinking that through. The future of SmackDown is Steph. Like, you're just Stephanie McMahon. So, you know, Rey Mysterio Jr., that's all well and good, but let's focus on what's really important, and that's McMahon.
Her and her good buddy Kidman.
Yeah, exactly.
So random.
Sitting back there, obviously, yeah. She asked Kidman if he can do that dive right before they had to go out in the parking lot. And also, I thought that Eric said, everything seemed off. He's popping up out of a sunroof, smiling really creepily, and he said Steph in a really weird way. So And I don't really remember what that was, other than I made a note of it. It was like, this seemed really kind of creepy, which I guess maybe is what he was going for.
I really like him, Bischoff, though, because just because he's so like seedy, but he's also like kind of a maniac, which I enjoy. Like, he's just coming in with his head sticking out of the moonroof like a maniac, screaming and stuff. Or like at the end of Raw when he's just like, "I will hit you. I'm gonna get you."
Okay. Yeah. Well, and then he says, "Did we knock her out? We knocked her out, but we don't know who it is."
Yeah.
I guess they're cliffhanger.
Yeah. Get away, Eric. But I thought this was a pretty good episode of SmackDown. Probably there was definitely some filler at moments, but I think the good. Definitely outweighed it. I like Ray's debut. I thought the main event was really good. I enjoyed the tag match for what it was. I did think, like we discussed, we did get a little bit too much of the GM stuff on here, like the GM drama, as I called it. But overall, still, I think a little bit better than average. I went 6 out of 10 for this episode of SmackDown.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I had... You know, I thought it was an excellent cage match, and I love the save by Cena and Ray, and the tag match with Hogan and Rock provided some nice highlights, and Ray's debut, of course. Yeah, but I thought it, I don't know if it's enough to save it from the backstage bullshit and the filler matches. And I said that the SmackDown undercard just has nothing of interest right now, noting Rikishi, Alboski, and Holly, but as I was kind of typing that up, I realized that on your previous shows, you've been talking about Jamie Noble and Nydia. And then I wrote that I was sad that I didn't see him because I really liked her act. I'm kind of pissed that I didn't get to see him and didn't, you know, because I loved that act. So, and I wanted to be able to talk about it. But I guess they were taking, you know, you got to get Valboski and the Hardcore Holly on the show. I mean, obviously. So I'm going to go 5 on this one. So I thought the main event really kind of helped it. You know, as we talked through it, there was quite a bit of good stuff on it. There were points where the GM stuff was overwhelming, and then the matches that I just couldn't see a point on kind of drug it down for me a little bit. But
yeah, I'd say it was good, but not great. But so with that, we'll get into our awards. Best match, I had Rock and Eddie as my best match.
Okay, I had Edge and Jericho in the steel cage match.
Yep, perfectly good. Best moment, this one was easy for me. I had the Triple H turn on Shawn Michaels.
I had the same.
Yep.
Although I did consider the Ray debut, but I mean, that was really kind of a match. It didn't seem like it was as much of a moment.
Yeah, and it was cool, but I also think it was kind of just standard, like nothing really much happened. He just kind of went out and had a good match and was like, "Hey, I'm here." You know, he didn't really do anything. Not that he needed to, but, you know.
Yeah, and I will say that if you had asked me when Ray debuted before I was started listening to your podcast, I would have told you that this at SummerSlam 2002. And if you'd said he debuted before that, I would have not believed you. So in my memory, I've got some kind of Mandela effect going on where that was his first match was SummerSlam 02.
Yeah, it does make sense. But my best show actually went with the Raw, a rare win for Raw here. So the Eric Bischoff regime is off to a hot start.
Yes, I also had Raw.
My LVP, I went with Nowinski because I just, you know, I guess not all his fault, but I just don't know what he's up to right now, like what they're doing with him.
Yeah, so I had that there were a few candidates, Bubba Ray, D'Lo, and Stasiak, but I didn't think that was really fair. They were only out there for, you know, less than 3 minutes. I also went Chris Nowinski because he did have the opportunity to cut a promo before being killed by The Undertaker, but he just didn't do anything with it. So he's my LVP.
My MVP, I went with Rock just because I thought he was really good in the Eddie match. He was good in the tag match. And just, I feel like his return, he's been kind of a workhorse on these shows. I feel like he just brought a really good energy to the shows. I just feel like his presence sort of elevates these shows when he's on them. So I went Rock for MVP.
Yeah, I would agree. So I was just looking at my top 5 and realized I left one off. So I need to either come up with a top six or cut one. So if you want to start,
Yeah. So my top five, I had Rock, Eddie, for both of them, for being in the main event on Raw. I had Ray because I liked what he did. I liked his debut, and I liked that moment at the end. And then I was kind of didn't really know, because I wasn't super, I guess, sort of Edge and Jericho. But then at the same time, I kind of want to give a little bit of a rub to Shawn and Triple H. It's hard to say who really carried that turn well. I'd probably give it to Shawn because he was good in the DX moment, but he was also, I thought, better than Triple H earlier in the show in the kind of promos and interviews and stuff. So I'll probably go Shawn, and then let's go Edge. I thought Edge looked pretty good in the cage match.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that will make Chad Campbell very sad, as he gave me a hard time for picking Edge in my top five the last time I was on this podcast. But I had Edge as one of my top five, and I'm going to keep him there. He did win that cage match, and he did lead. So Jericho is the one I'm going to cut because I'd forgotten to include Eddie Guerrero, and he needs to be on here. That was just kind of an oversight on my part. I'll also have Rock. I'll also have Rey Mysterio. I think I want to give a little bit of love to Rob Van Dam for unifying IC and European title, and he, you know, that was a good ladder match. And that's just kind of, like I said before, there's so much going on that you know, could have and should have been a bigger moment. And I even had Benoit and Booker as kind of honorable mentions, because I really liked that match as well. But, so there were a lot of candidates. You're right. This is a really stacked time.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You think five is, like, a lot, because you're only talking about, like, two episodes of TV. But when you start getting into it, there's just so much talent. And sometimes it's hard because, you know, like, on these, I think Rock and Eddie really stood out for me. But everybody else was kind of in a similar sort of vein, I guess. And so it's hard to say, like, who's better than who. But, yeah, definitely a lot of people operating at a pretty high level, I would say. But
Well, Rock was on both shows, and then, I mean, I thought that the Edge and Jericho cage match was good enough. I wanted to get them both in, but, you know, there were a lot of other people doing a lot of good stuff. So.
Yep. But that will wrap us up, Tyler, for this episode of Ruthlessly Aggressive. Tyler, do you have anything that you would like to plug right now?
So we just finished the GWCW, the greatest WCW wrestler project at Place to Be Nation. So the votes are in and they're being tabulated. We will soon be releasing them on the Place to Be Nation website and sharing it via social media. So that would be one thing. And also related to that project, you and I will have a series of podcasts revealing our list. So look for that soon. And you know, had fun doing what we've done and looking forward to some more.
Yeah, it'll be a good time. It'll be fun. You'll be able to hear us hash our anxieties and second guessing our lists and all that kind of stuff, and telling why we pick these matches and why they're so good. So that'll be a lot of fun. We're going to try and break it up to where it's not too many in one episode, so they're very digestible, kind of trying to keep it to about an hour or so you can kind of listen and not, like, we're not going to reveal our entire list in one episode where it's like 7 hours or something. Try and keep it, break it up a bit, but yeah, that'll be a ton of fun. As for the North-South feed, obviously we have tons of stuff covering seemingly endless eras of wrestling, depending on what you want. I'll specifically shout out new podcast we have here, which is a New Gen on a Mission, covering 1992 up until about 1997. So I think their timeline is they're going to start with Shawn and Brett at Survivor Series 92 and then go up until Montreal Screwjob. So that's kind of going to be their timeline of those kind of early days of the New Generation era. So be sure to check that one out, and obviously check out everything else we have here in the North South feed. You never know, maybe we'll get into a GM war here where we start trading, start trying to sign talent from one show to it next. Who knows? Maybe that's what the future holds here on the North South feed, Tyler.
Yeah, he's signing talent away from the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, or. Yeah.
And just like on these shows, it will be equally compelling to listen to, as no one will care who goes from one show to the next. But anyway,
I'm looking forward to you pulling up in a limo and yelling that you're going to kick Scott Crisciolo in the testicles. So
wouldn't be the first time. But anyway, that has been another episode of the Rooster Aggressive Podcast. Thanks for listening, always, and be sure to check us out next time. Check out everything on the North South feed. Thank you, Tyler, for coming on. But other than that, that will be it. That's it. Peace out. Bye-bye. Thank you.